a motherless child. This was the uprising that rocked our land. 13 districts rebelled against the country that fed them, loved them, protected them. Brother turned on brother until nothing remained. And then came the peace, hard fought, sorely won. A people rose up from the ashes and a new era was born. But freedom has a cost. When the traitors were defeated, we swore as a nation we would never know this treason again. And so it was decreed that each year the various districts of Pan Am would offer up in tribute one young man and woman to fight to the death in a pageant of honor, courage, and sacrifice. The lone victor, bathed in riches, would serve as a reminder of our generosity and our forgiveness. This is how we remember our past. This is how we safeguard our future.
By mandating everybody buy a house.
A system where every American bears responsibility for owning health insurance.
What are you going to do about it? Are you going to fine them? Are you going to garnish their wages?
Some of the reforms that we want for the insurance market are very hard to achieve unless we've got everybody covered.
We don't want to put in a situation in which on the front end we are mandating them, we are forcing them to purchase insurance, and if the subsidies are inadequate, the burden is on them and they will be penalized.
We can't control costs unless everyone is covered.
Hillary Clinton's attacking, but what's she not telling you about her health care plan? It forces everyone to buy insurance, even if you can't afford it. And you pay a penalty if you don't.
But you don't have an individual mandate, then what would everybody do?
If the government does not force taxpayers to buy health care, that we
do
will penalize
them. Do
you have
contingency if the exchanges are not ready, up and running, with a fully informed public by October 1st?
As I answered before, Congressman, we will be open for open enrollment October 1st.
So you can assure this committee there will be no further deadlines missed, no further delays in the implementation of the exchanges?
We are on track to meet the October 1st deadline.
The easiest, most consumer-friendly website to use in multiple languages with the kind of helpline that pops up, when you're shopping online, that can.
Regardless of what you hear, in every state in the country, there will be a new health marketplace.
And we should make no mistake. This nuclear option is ultimately an example of the arrogance of power. It is a fundamental power grab by the majority party, propelled by its extreme right and designed to change the reading of the Constitution.
The fact is, to move forward as contemplated by the majority is moving toward breaking the rules to change the rules. That's improper. It will change the Senate forever. That's not good. That this is a slippery slope. Once you have a rule changed illegally, then you can do it again.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
But if Mr. Paul wants to be taken seriously, he needs to do more than pull political stunts that fire up impressionable libertarian kids.
Republican in name only.
Listen, that's some folks who will say, if you ever say anything nice about a Democrat, you're a rhino. They can call me whatever they want. I don't care. My view is let people judge me by my record. Yeah, I'm a guy who's cut taxes $2.3 billion in the state. Our budget in fiscal 2014 spends less than John Corzine did in fiscal 2008. We've reformed teacher tenure. We'll reform pension and benefits to make folks pay more for their pensions and to lose their cost of living adjustments. I mean, if they did that stuff in Washington, they'd be having a parade for the Washington Republicans. So they can call me whatever they want to call me. You look at my record. I think most people objectively look at my record, as we were talking about before when we were outside. It's a solid conservative record. For goodness sakes, almost everybody's being called a rhino now. If you weren't in favor of the government shutdown, you're a rhino.
Shutting down the
government with a flawed strategy. I like to remind people of one of my favorite old Kentucky sayings, which is there's no education in the second kick of a mule. The first kick of a mule was when the government was shut down in 1995, and this was the second kick. Look, it was a mistake. We knew it was a mistake back in July, but others decided to pursue this strategy. It did not work, but
why do you think we have a winner?
Behind us. We're moving on.
What do you mean?
I mean, why do we have a winner? Hope.
Hope?
Hope. It is the only thing stronger than fear. A little hope is effective. A lot of hope is dangerous. A spark is fine, as long as it's contained.
So, well, you know, I think we publicly can point out the problems and the hypocrisy. Interestingly, the government was shut down with Democrats refusing to accept a one-year delay on the individual mandate. Now you've got a dozen of them saying, oh, guess what? It's such a horrible rollout. We're now in favor of delaying the individual mandate. So there certainly is some irony that Democrats shut down government because they wouldn't accept a one-year delay. Now it's so bad.
Number one,
they're actually
to change
in favor.
The Democrats want to talk about anything other than the millions of people who are hurting because of Obamacare. But number two, it replayed. You know, just as the president said, if you like your plan, you can keep it. Mm-hmm. Harry Reid has said repeatedly this year that he would under no circumstances use the nuclear option to change the Senate rules. And just like President Obama did, he broke his promise, he broke his word. But you put your finger on the immediate end goal here, which is they want to pack the court, and in particular pack the D.C. Circuit, to cover up the president, and this is one of the most troubling aspects of this administration, has been lawless, has been picking and choosing which part of the statutes he'll follow, which parts he won't, and this administration does not want to be held to account for disregarding the law by an impartial judiciary, so they're trying to pack the courts with judges that they hope will just rubber stamp the president's refusal to follow the law.
Happy Hunger Games! And may the odds be ever in your favor.
Happy Obamacare Games. As the Obamacare Hunger Games continue their spectacular disaster of failure, Darth Redius nukes the Senate, hurling the Imperial City on a path to destruction and the death of the old Republic. What will rise to replace it? Probably nothing. In this new Imperial tyranny, we shall retain all the appearances of the American Republic and even the Constitution, but we shall be living in a kinder, gentler police state, unless we don't comply with the politically correct culture. If you resist, you will be drawn into the real Hunger Games or a FEMA camp. The odds may not be in your favor. Measures like the so-called nuclear option, which has nothing to do with Iran, by the way, along with the massive propaganda to save a failing corporatized medicine scheme and court packing are signs of a failing tyranny. But one, the squishy Republicans, can save. With the so-called nuclear option, the Senate is dead, and the consolidation of power in the imperial presidency is nearly complete, and the so-called opposition party does nothing to stop it. Yet there is hope. Conservatism is catching fire. A small, resolute band of real conservatives has a foothold in the Republican Party, and they are fighting for liberty. They are fighting for you behind enemy lines to restore the Republic and preserve our inheritance of liberty. Will you squander your inheritance for mere bread and circuses? Or will you stand with the tributes, with the champions of liberty, and roll back the failing despotism of Emperor Obama Don't Care and Darth Redius? When darkness falls, it is time for a lightning strike of liberty's thunder. Do not despair. Do not grow despondent. Hold on to hope in liberty. Don't let the Surrender Party run cover for the Obamacare Hunger Games. Now is the time for a conservative takeover of the dead GOP. If you want Obamacare repealed, if you want Jefferson's rules for the Senate restored, if you want the Constitution to be enforced, then you have to stand in the breach, recruit patriots to Liberty's army, and defeat the autocrats. You always have a choice. Suffer the Hunger Games, or evict the usurpers. But first, you have to overthrow the statists in the GOP. Stand with your conservative tributes and end the reign of the rhinos. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the party, or watch the statists in both parties push their agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives, who are right to demand the repeal, or at least the delay of Obamacare's Hunger Games. To defeat the Democrat socialist, first you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rexus Aberdeen, broadcasting from the capital city of Panem.
I'm your co-host, Troglodyte, from the left coast. You know, I watched Hunger Games last night because we built this theme, or it came out of your head. And one of the things that I find amazing is I like sci-fi, and I've watched it off and on my whole life. Some of it is, most of it's junk. Some of them are really good. But every one of the really good ones, whether it's Matrix or The Hunger Games or, you know, whatever the case may be, is always this theme, Star Wars, you know, of this totalitarian empire that controls and manipulates, you know, the masses. And that newest one that came out with, what's his name, that does the veteran stuff, that did Sniper or Shooter or whatever. What's his name? No. He's the stocky guy. But, you know, the one where they lived on the off-world on this off-world space station, and they could heal anything, and, you know, and they lived down on the world. And anyway, it's just this common theme. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Had Matt Damon in it.
Yeah, right, Matt Damon. Sorry, I couldn't remember his name.
Matt
Damon. You know, because he always plays
a
good macho.
I like Bourne, but I don't like Matt Damon.
No, not Matt Damon. No. I was thinking of the other guy. I'm sorry. I got it all confused. The other guy, the stocky one that came up with Damon. No.
Ben Affleck.
That did. No, he's tall. But anyway, here's the point, is the minds of the people who write these novels have become great movies. Yeah. No, the other one. The other actor, the one we like. Anyway, my son was trying to help me now, too. But, oh, my God, where am I at? Okay, Olympia. Here's the point, is that these people come up with this stuff, and if you really watch it and you really intellectualize it, it's kind of scary, you know, because we are at a point where the push, and I think people are starting to wake up. I mean, I don't know what kind of drug people have to be on to listen to this hope and change and forward stuff and not understand that this is the same stuff that, you know, the rest of the Marxists and the socialists have used. But it is amazing to me that as Europe is collapsing, which has been the greatest modern wave of peaceful development of socialism in the history of the world, you know, in terms of not having, you know, like a Hitler or a Stalin or whatever the case may be, but, you know, where they developed it and they had the economy and they started experimenting with all these, you know, forms of social programs. And we were more of a free country, and there's been that push to move us that direction. And it seems like they're doubling down, you know, at 10 times the effort right now to push all this crap through. And all you got to do is look at Europe and go, there's the end result. Europe is falling apart because that's our closest cultural neighbor. You know, that, I mean, that's where we came from. That's where the development of America and the colonies came from. This is serious stuff. And I don't know what it's going to take for people to wake up, but we're in trouble. You know, we're in trouble economically. We're in trouble Obamacare. I mean, we were talking about this this rollout, when the deadlines and 2015 and 2014, and I was getting a little bit confused, you know, which one, which where, individual mandate, you know, business mandate, what are we doing? And I'm thinking, you know, by the time the 2014 elections come around, even with all the hell that people are dealing with the Obamacare rollout, somehow, some way, Americans have the attention span of a gnat, which means the next time the story changes in the MS, you know, the mainstream media, you know, they're going to forget about all this crap we're going through right now. And it is amazing to me how fast they can switch, you know, whether it was IRS to NSA to the AP scandal to, you know, AP Rosen to whistleblowers being persecuted, you know, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, reporters dying. I mean, you know, all this stuff going on, and yet things came at us so fast, Rex, that here we are, 110% focus on Obamacare, which any of us with a brain knew this was going to be a disaster. Not the details of what we're faced today, but we knew it was going to be a disaster. And things like Benghazi and Syria, you know, we almost went to, you know, we almost started World War III over Syria. I mean, yet we don't even talk about it anymore, and people are still dying every day. And we're funding terrorists. I mean, it is unfathomable that people can't focus for more than the time it takes for the news to switch the topic of the day. And that's the frustrating part of what we do, because we focus, we dig in, we take a topic, and we stay on it, and we break it down with the intent to educate people, to give people tools so that they can educate other people, because Washington, you know, like Levin says, Washington is not going to fix itself. These people are so corrupt, so out of control. They've been out of control for decades. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you spend all your days worrying about Democrats. No, you just need to look at the Republican Party, and you can see it there, too. It is so out of control, and they're not going to fix it. You know, when we get into the financial section, we'll talk about some things that China's doing. And I'm like going, does anybody see this stuff? Am I crazy? Do I have a different set of lenses? Or do I just, you know, am a little bit concerned with my country? Because that's where you need to be. You don't need to be freaked out, because we're not in the Hunger Games yet. You know, you don't need to be freaked out, but it's going to get pretty ugly here in the next couple of years, whether or not we get Republicans in power or not, if we get the right Republicans in power, because there's a whole pressure cooker in economics and all across the world, decisions that have been made, our open borders. We still don't know what's in this country. So there's a lot going on. Anyway, I'm off. You're the one that picked this theme.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was watching Vine videos. Did you say something important? No, I'm kidding. But yeah, you know, people don't pay attention, and that's the problem. Don't people pay attention? People don't pay attention because A, the news cycle
is overwhelming.
It's overwhelming, but it's also because the so-called news cycle is designed to keep you focused on their agenda as opposed to what is really going on.
You mean like Iran?
Yeah. I mean, what was that? Yesterday at 3 o'clock or something, they announced this, quote, deal. I mean, we don't really want to get into that today, but the only reason that this deal was made was simply to fabricate the pretext for war once they realize that all the buttons and levers they're pushing to float this paper economy are failing. That's their fallback position. Let's go to war. And it's also very much like the theme in The Hunger Games. The whole idea behind The Hunger Games, if you haven't seen the movies or read the books, I think they're targeted to adolescents, is a situation like war or a gladiatorial contest where your children are being sacrificed from your district or whatever It tends to put you in a state of fear and a state where you are willing to give up certain things that are yours by right in order to have somebody else step in and provide you with some kind of false pretext of security. And the reason people don't see this stuff, the reason a lot of it is dismissed as conspiracy theory nonsense, and there's a lot of conspiracy theory nonsense out there, especially on the so-called alternative media, but the simple fact is most of the, quote, major conspiracies, there's nothing hidden about them. They're factual. I mean, the whole idea is like, well, is the Federal Reserve really a conspiracy? Well, yeah. I mean, just look at the facts. It's a private bank with monopoly privileges secured by the government that controls all of our money. It was put together in secret. Actually, November 22nd, 1910, was the day that men who represented 25% of the world's wealth took a trip down to Jekyll Island, and they met in secret to craft the banking bill, which would later become the Federal Reserve. In fact, the name of it was developed by Warburg, who wasn't even an American citizen at the time. He was a German national. And he said that it has to give people the idea that it's some kind of government organization and that it's federal in structure. So they decided to call it the Federal Reserve System. And then they went out and spoke against the bill that they wrote so that people would go, well, if the bankers don't like this thing, it must be good because it's going to be bad for the bankers. So people got behind it. And next thing you know, 100 years ago this Christmas Eve, I think it was either the 22nd or 23rd of December 1913, Congress passed the Federal Reserve Act and Woodrow Wilson signed it into law, and we've been screwed ever since. That's not a conspiracy.
Well, no.
Those are facts.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Sorry.
I got a little off topic.
I'm sorry.
But it's important to note these things. And why is that important? Well, basically, and we've done shows on this, but basically the fundamental reason that costs go up of anything, whether it's your college education, your medical costs, food, your golf lessons, I don't care what it is. Yeah, it goes up because of the devaluation of the currency. It's the number one reason your medical costs are going up. And then here comes the government with this wonderful way to solve the problem. We're going to write a bill that provides 100% corporatized medicine, forces you to buy companies from our selected private corporations that support our campaigns, and if you don't buy their crap, we're going to tax you. That's what they came up with.
I thought it was a fine.
Fine, tax, whatever. They're stealing your money. And the funny thing is that this is some kind of liberal, progressive idea. This is totally corporatist through and through, and the Republicans are not really against it. They like to talk
against
it.
No, they're not.
But they're not really against it. So, you know, well, if we elected Mitt Romney, this wouldn't be happening. Bull crap. This would be happening faster because the Republicans wouldn't even be pretending to oppose it. That's the problem. And now this thing is falling apart, and so they're going into high gear to defend it, right? Rather than doing the right thing, which is exactly what Ted Cruz and Mike Lee were trying to get the Republican Party to push the Democrats to do, which resulted in Harry Reid shutting down the government, but then the rhinos caved. McConnell gave Reid everything he wanted on a silver platter. Had they stood strong, then this thing would have been delayed. And all these problems we're seeing now would have gone away. Now, some Republicans didn't want these things to go away because this gives them something to speak against. But some Republicans, like Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, were saying, this is going to be bad. We don't want people to go through this. We have the opportunity to stop it. Let's do that. Well, guess what? There's going to be another exact same chance for them to do this early next year. Oh, wait a minute. Harry Reid just nuked the Senate so that won't happen. And that's what we're going to have to focus on. Why did Harry Reid nuke the Senate? Is it because they're winning on Obamacare, they're winning on their foreign policy, they're winning on their, quote, progressive, hopey-changey agenda? Or did Harry Reid nuke the Senate because they're losing, because nobody's buying this bull crap anymore? And who's to stop them? Allegedly the opposition party. But by nuking the Senate, that party, are you playing Hunger Games over there?
Well, no, I had a quick, I had a little emergency, and I was too far from my phone to mute it. Sorry.
Don't worry about it. Take care of what you need to take care of. So Harry Reid nuked the Senate, which, I mean, it's called the nuclear option. What it really is simply a reversal of 2.25 centuries of rules that require a supermajority to pass legislation and a supermajority for appointments. It's designed to slow down the Senate and make it more deliberative. Now, it's just going to be like the House. In fact, the 17th Amendment, which was also passed in 1913, changed your Senate from the body that represents the states, because it was the senators were elected by their state legislatures, to popular election, turning them into nothing more than congressmen with extended terms. And now that the Senate has been nuked, there is no slowdown. There's no representation for the minority party. Whoever has that first vote over 50 can jam through anything that they want. And what they're trying to jam through is appointments to the D.C. Circuit Court, because Obama needs to pack it with his judges, because that's the court that's going to hear the cases challenging Obamacare. That's the court that's going to hear the cases challenging his economy and land-destroying EPA regulations. Basically, this is a hedge against the challenges for his failed policies, and to make sure that what Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul have done in the past won't happen again. It's pretty bad, and it's the rhino's fault.
It's frustrating as all get out. I remember before the primary even started, and I was watching the news, and after the Tea Party had the sweeping winds across the country, and I'd watch the news, and I would think, okay, Obama would introduce this, and then Republicans would grunt and moan and yell and go on Fox News and do the Sunday shows. Boehner would get up and speak, you know, five words and walk away, and then they would, you know, say how that ain't going to happen. Let me go golf. I need a drink. And then they would join the Democrats and pass it. And I saw that. And I remember, and I, you know, I didn't, like I said, I don't come from a federal politics background. You know, I've always been more involved in my community and my state. And I remember seeing this going, what the hell was that? You know what I mean? Debt ceiling increase, after all that noise, they just roll over. You know, every step of the way, with all this power at their fingertips. And I never really understood the Senate that well until after the election, and really, you know, Rand kind of made some noise. And of course, you know, I used to keep an eye on Jim DeMint, and Rand started making some noise and started getting some public attention. All of a sudden, the Senate got a lot of attention. And I'm going like, well, what do you mean? You know, yeah, they got a majority, but well, there's got to be another reason things aren't getting done. Well, come to find out, you know, they got a couple infiltrators in the Republican Party in the Senate that have been handing them everything they want, you know, McConnell and McCain and a couple other guys. But those are the two of the old dogs that have been there a long time, you know, the master squishes. It is mind-boggling to me some days. You like that?
Master squishes. Yeah, I like that. Master squishes. Yeah. That's a good name for it. Yeah, Jane McComed and Mitch McConman.
Well, and here's what we're facing, because a lot of people are very frustrated with the Republican Party, and I agree, I am too, but I've been frustrated with them all the way back to the Bush era, and even before that in some cases.
H.W.
Really,
Bush era.
Yeah, but really is where I really, really, really woke up was, you know, around the Patriot Act, and that's what really caught my attention. And then having to suspend free enterprise to save it, you know, or capitalism to save it. It was like, excuse me, did anybody hear that besides me? Is there just something wrong with me? I hear things that other people don't hear, but the signs are there. And
yeah, that wasn't a joke.
So here,
wasn't a joke, though. He actually meant it.
Abandoned free market.
Yeah, here's what's scary.
Save the free market system.
I have abandoned free market principles to save the free market system. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
That's like saying I'm going to abandon the Bill of the Fourth Amendment to save the Fourth Amendment, and we're going to spy on everybody in the country. Same thing.
To save your civil liberties. To protect your civil liberties.
I'm going to abandon the Second Amendment because we got, you know, all these people killing people in this country, and so I'm going to take away your guns to save you. Same thing,
yep.
Rex. Every
yep.
step
yep.
of the way, every Bill of Rights that we deal with today, it is the same attack and the same bullcrap. And I almost was the first one to cuss. And it, you're going to be it. And here's the thing, is that if people don't wake up, we're in trouble. Because we were in trouble when they signed the Patriot Act. But a lot of people were asleep. They were scared. We just got, you know, the attack, and 3,000 people were killed. And, you know, we had wars going on, and everybody was freaked out. We were going, rah, 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 America. And now all of a sudden we're like going, what happened? Now, some people were on top of this. I can honestly say I wasn't on top of the details. I had a lot of stuff going on in my life, but my gut instinct was telling me something's broken and it ain't right. And I remember that day. I remember where I was at, driving in my car, when I heard on the radio they signed the Patriot Act. And I turned to my son, who ended up fighting in Iraq. You know, he spent almost, I don't know, 2.5+ years in Iraq. But I remember turning to him and said, our freedoms are over. I'll never forget that day, because if you will sign away your freedoms for a little bit of security, then you'll do anything, like getting freaking sexually molested at the airport every time you want to get on a plane. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right, and the you know, I smell what you're stepping in. The simple fact is that when people are scared and they make decisions out of fear, they will allow the lofty promises of politicians who are going to protect you and feed you and tuck you in to bed at night to actually convince them that that's going to happen. Look, the simple fact is that there are a lot of people in this country who want the government to take care of every aspect of their lives. But that's not what this country is about, and they need to grow up. All right, get out of your parents' basement, put down the joint, quit jerking off on the Internet, and get a life. Because if you want to be free, okay, you have to be responsible, which means that you have to provide for your own security. The purpose of government is to guarantee and protect your existing rights. It isn't supposed to provide you with material benefits. It isn't supposed to provide you with anything else. It is supposed to guarantee your rights of individual liberty. And then you're supposed to take care of the rest. Now, that doesn't mean government doesn't have a role. It certainly does. We're not anarchists. If we were anarchists, we'd be looking for chaos, and then we'd end up with a totalitarian regime anyway. The balance the Founding Fathers provided us was putting the power structure as far to the right, if you understand the power divide, on the left is absolute total government, and on the right is total absence of government or anarchy. The Founding Fathers put us as far to the right as they could without chaos and anarchy. And it's slightly to the left of where we were with Articles of Confederation. Now, that's besides the point. We can debate the Constitution all day long. It is a framework that has to be enforced. If you don't enforce it, it means nothing. The rules of the Senate are there in order to create it, to create more slow deliberation over these issues so that government power doesn't expand rapidly. But if you ignore the rules, it doesn't matter. And that's exactly what we have happening. And are people waking up? No, unfortunately, normalcy bias convinces most of us not to wake up, to think that everything is hunky-dory. Hey, look, baseball's on. I can watch Dancing with the Celebutards. I could go to the store and buy, you know, any number of 4,000 different types of cereal with high fructose corn syrup. There's gas in my car. Things seem relatively normal because you're not looking at the second, third, and fourth step of their actions. Now, of course, if you're listening to this show, you are. The problem is that we need more people to get involved, and you need to get involved now. Thanksgiving this week, but the election is less than a year away, and this midterm election is even more important than the 2012 mm-hmm. presidential election. You've got to get on it now. You've got to wake people up. You've got to get them involved. Now, that's what Chris and I are trying to do here on Liberty's Thunder, is provide you with information from an authentically conservative perspective, not from a Republican apologist perspective or, you know, a, quote, moderate rhino, but authentic conservatism. And last Thursday we did our first show. We'll do some more. We'll announce when we're going to do it, on what actual conservatism is, so that you can apply those principles to the candidates, the issues, and find out who's really a champion of liberty and who is, in fact, a statist liar. Okay? So, but if you don't get the information out there and you don't get other people involved, it won't mean much. Okay? We're doing this, but we don't have any means of getting it out there other than you. And we thank all of you who are promoting the show and posting it and tweeting it and getting it out there. We need more people to do it, and not in the same old places, posting it to each other. We got to make it a bigger audience. And if you're on Facebook, please go to Liberty's Thunder. That's our show page. It currently says the Tex and Rex Show. I put a request into Facebook to change it to Liberty's Thunder, our new name. Hopefully that'll go through sometime soon. Like that page, and whenever we're broadcasting, you will get in your news feed information about what we're broadcasting, a link to the show so you can listen to it live, like right now, Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, or anytime you want on Blog Talk Radio. It's in archives. And you'll also get all of the clips and articles and things we use for the show in the comments section right there. Just click on the pic. All the information's there, and you can share it. And, of course, also go to Coalition of Freedom. That's Chris's group on Facebook, Coalition of Freedom, where there's deep discussion and cross-referencing of news to try to get down to the truth and find out who are the culprits and who are the friends so that you know who to support and you know who to oust. It's very, very, very important. Anytime you want in Blog Talk Radio, by the way, if you go down below the scrolling graphics, there is a download episode link. Right-click on that, and you get an MP3. You can play it in your MP3-enabled device. You can send it an email. You can burn a CD. If you burn a CD, take it to your meetings. Take it to your Tea Party meetings, your Republican Party meetings, your Campaign for Liberty meetings, AA, NA, Sexaholics, wherever you go, just take it and give it to people. Because it's the only way you're going to get them to look at things from a different perspective, to understand that conservatism is not the same thing as the Republican Party, and conservatism is not the same thing as libertarianism. It is about the Constitution, and it is about building coalitions of people who have slightly different views on things but agree on the basic principles of liberty so that we can work together to roll back this enormous state. And that's what we're trying to do here, and we need your help, and we appreciate everything you've done to get the show out there. Chris, unless you got something to add, I think we should roll into our first guest. I've got 4 minutes with Rand Paul talking about this disastrous Obamacare games rollout, and then we're going to roll into this Harry Reid nuclear option.
No, go ahead.
All right, here's Rand Paul. I think it's on Fox Noise, but it's Rand Paul, so we're going to take a listen.
Rather shocking news to many tonight, the email from Henry Chow about the rollout. Your thoughts?
I thought the president said if he knew anything about this, he probably wouldn't have opened up and started the exchanges. So it is surprising, I guess startling, that a lot of knowledge was that they weren't ready for prime time, and yet they went ahead with it anyway.
You know, first of all, if I were on any of the committees, what I would do is I'd go back and look at Henry Chow's testimony and see if anything he said under oath conflicted with this email, because this email shows that on September 25th, he certainly knew. In fact, actually what he attached to it was a screenshot of the website, and the screenshot of the website says the system is down at the moment. So he knew that.
Yeah, we're finding out that my staff and myself, we're trying to get on Obamacare because we have to sign up through the exchanges, and we're familiar with the error screen.
In looking at Henry Chow's emails, and he's the CMS tech official, what struck me is what's not there. We used to always in the courtroom do something called impeachment by omission. What are you not saying? And what he's not saying is that he's saying absolutely nothing about the American people. What he is saying, he's worried about the media ramping up the hyperbole about HCGov not functional. So he's worried about what the media would say about them. Not one word about the American people.
Right. Well, seeing if this were a private business, they'd be worried about it being functional, not a media reaction. They would want to make sure that it's going to work. And that's really the problem here. We're turning over a sixth of our economy to the government, which doesn't work on a profit motive, doesn't have to please the customer. And I know this firsthand. I've been a physician for 20 years, so I've already been dealing with the health care through government, through Medicare and Medicaid. And personally, it's not very friendly. But it's always been the physician that had to deal with an unfriendly government. Now it's every consumer in America, every individual patient in America is going to have to deal with an unfriendly government. And I think we're finding they're not going to be too pleased.
All right, well, we have these emails today, and last night President Obama pretty much suggested that the GOP was in the way of fixing these glitches. Are you in the way?
But the interesting thing is we offered, before all of this came out, we offered him a pass. We offered him a whole year where he didn't have to go through this individual mandate. None of this that he's going through right now would have happened if he would have taken us up on his offer. And our offer really was during the middle of the shutdown. We were offering a compromise, one-year delay of the mandate, and he would have avoided a lot of this.
So where does this leave us now? I mean, you know, I guess that it might be particularly appalling to the American people to find out that they care more about the media going after them for a website they knew about wasn't going to work as of October 1. But what about the American people? Where does this lead us?
Well, I don't think it's fixable. I will vote to try to fix it. I'll vote to try to help people not have their insurance canceled. But really, it's too late, because what's happened is the 5 million people have been canceled. Even if you say, oh, you can go back to your previous policy, the policies don't exist, and the insurance companies have been given a perverse incentive. They're told, you know what, we're going to force your customers to buy a more expensive policy. So they're not going to offer the cheaper policies anymore.
If you can't fix this, and if they're not going to offer the cheap policies, and if this is a mess that can't be fixed, is there any way to roll it back to where we were? Are we too far down the track?
You could, but the president would have to admit that he's failed and that it's not going to work. And he may have to. I never really thought it could be this bad. This is worse than I ever imagined it could be. But it could spiral and get worse, because over the next year, if young, healthy people don't sign up because it costs too much, then it costs even more. So if by the end of the year this becomes a high-risk pool and only the sickest people get insurance and no young, healthy people buy it, they have to readjust their prices and they go higher, and there's even more incentive for young people not to buy insurance, which drives the prices even higher.
Which is sort of interesting. Your home state, Kentucky, seems to be working well. It's a state exchange. You took a Medicaid expansion, your state did, and you have young people signing up in a proportion that, at least statistically, looked good.
Maybe. I mean, still 40 times more people have been canceled than are signing up. 7,000 people have signed up, and 280,000 people have been canceled. Many of them are young and healthy that have been canceled, because this is the individual market. So by far and away, more people have been canceled than have signed up. So I'm not sure they can really call Kentucky a success.
That's the kind of crap that they roll out there. First of all, they say, you know, they pick on Kentucky for two reasons. One, that's where the minority leader for the other party is, and also it's the state from which Rand Paul's from, or the Commonwealth. So they pick on Kentucky and say, oh, Kentucky's exchanges are working great. Well, Rand Paul just exposed that that's a bunch of hogwash. And, you know, the other thing now, and the meme is, of course, that Obamacare is failing because of the Republicans' obstruction. It's kind of odd because they don't really obstruct. They just pretend to obstruct. And the right-wing media beating up on it and rooting for failure. You don't have to root for failure. First of all, why would you want to root for failure? This thing was set up to fail in the first place. We're hoping for a successful healthcare delivery system, and there were some things that needed to be fixed with what we had going on, predominantly that were problems created by government in the first place over the last 60 years. But this solution was definitely not it. But what, I mean, you know, rooting for failure, how does that affect the $684 million website that failed? How does that affect the fact that you force insurance companies into canceling people, but because they actually tell people that they're being canceled instead of telling them they're being transitioned into an upgraded product, which is a bunch of horse crap, then it's the insurance company's fault. So basically this is just like everything else with this guy and his name on it. It's everybody's fault but his, except that this bill was pushed through a Senate and a House without a single Republican vote. Not even the rhinos voted for it, and it was jammed on an American people who didn't want it, and now that it's collapsing, these people want to run away from it. Yeah.
And didn't understand it. You know, it's complex. It's one of the most complex things that we've ever done in a single rollout. There's a lot of departments in the government, whether you're talking about Social Security, EPA, or whatever, that have grown into monstrosities with massive waste and fraud, massive waste and fraud. Look at the Pentagon. That new article came out, $8.5 trillion with a T, dollars unaccounted for since 1995. I mean, I don't know why people can't get this. So I got to just go to the post office and go, do I want my medical health care to look like this or to perform like this? Come on, people. I mean, the level of people's inability to to shut off the damn TV, get plugged into good networks where good information flows, whether it's, you know, blog sites or, you know, news, you know, whatever the case may be. You have to do the research and figure out who you can trust. Who can you trust to cut through the noise and the haste to give you the truth? Because we haven't heard the truth out of the federal government in a long, long, long time. And it's a mess.
At least a century.
And it's going to collapse. And that's the part that just blows me away, because you and I have this discussion all the time because this is what we do. But, you know, we study this stuff. We research it. We both have different backgrounds. But in our backgrounds, we have a critical thinking, you know, ability. And I'm looking at this thing going, doesn't anybody see this stuff? I mean, don't people understand? Are they so drugged up on psychotropic drugs and so numbed by what they watch on TV and the fake news that they can't even go, something doesn't sound right here? You know, it's like, I love that interview with Palin, you know, where she was said that nothing's free. And yet, you know, you have a government that prints money like it's going out of style, destroying our economic future and ruining our trade relationships around the world, and probably going to destroy our trade dollar and our petrodollar. In fact, you know, we'll get into that, I'm sure. But, you know, and going to leave us as a second-class nation in the world, if not, well, probably second class. We still have a lot of recovery ability. But shit's going to hit – oh, I did it. Crap's going to hit the fan, and these people keep pushing these programs down our throat. This is the biggest, most bureaucratical mess I've ever studied in my life of the things that I've studied, like I said, whether it's EPA, Social Security, whatever.
It's intentionally
so. One fell swoop. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. It's not really one fell swoop. They passed the law, and then they gave Sebelius unbelievable power to write regs that nobody elected her to do. But the fact is that the reason this is happening, you know, 'cause some people have an agenda. Now, the agenda is to crash the private insurance market in order for the government to come in and save the day with a single-payer system. That's clearly the intention. There's no other – otherwise, these people are just the most moronic people ever to be elected to any government anywhere in the universe. Either way, they shouldn't be in these positions to do this kind of damage. But the simple fact is what confuses most people, and I don't care if you're on the left, the right, moderate, independent, conservative, liberal, whatever, what confuses most people is that we're having this conversation about the stated intentions. And the only way you can understand how these things work is to go beyond the stated intentions and look at what's actually happening. This is not about providing more people with health care. This is not about reforming the insurance market. This is about taking it over. Now, there are still some committed lefties who think this is a good idea, which means that they have to be blind to the reality. But the simple fact is that the reason that we have this disaster is not because of Obama. It is not because of Harry Reid. It is not because of Nancy Pelosi. The reason we have this disaster is because George Bush bungled his presidency so badly that in 2006 the Democrats secured the majority for the first time since Gingrich secured the majority for the Republicans in 94, and then handed the presidency to this upstart senator that nobody knew from Chicago in 2008, and then handed it to him again in 2012 by running Romney.
He was barely a senator.
Right.
I mean,
so,
my God, he was a community organizer, and we still haven't seen his records. Who is he? What was his, you know, college? What was his background? You know, everything was sealed. My God!
At this point, what difference does it make? To quote Hillary Clinton,
the biggest economy in the world, the most powerful country in the world, the biggest military force in the world. And what the hell? Let's give it to a community org. Hell, hire me. I have a business background.
Yeah. Well, that'll disqualify you right off the bat. But the simple fact is, put the blame where the blame is due. The Republicans did this. The Republicans did this. By the Republicans' leadership, the RNC and the rhinos in this party, not acting in conformity with the Constitution, and with their own platform.
Or their platform, no kidding.
Right. duping conservatives and libertarians to give them money and vote for them so that they can run or, you know, manage the decay slightly better than the Democrats. That's not a choice. That's not an opposition. This is a controlled interest. This is controlled opposition. And unless this party is taken over, then the duopoly will reign supreme and the state keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, you can say, well, we need a third party. Well, a third party's not going to make it. Look, last election was primed for a third party because the two candidates were almost identical. And you only pulled 2 million votes. And that's just, of course, the presidential race. But the fact is that the top of the ticket does affect the down ballot. So the simple fact is that in the Republican Party, which is a party I could really care less about, but it's just slightly less bad than the Democrats, there are actual people who are fighting for it. You just heard Rand Paul. This is a guy who's got his finger on how bad this thing is. And so much so he pointed out the corrupt shenanigans going on with the IT system and all this this other stuff. Rand is up there. And keep in mind something. Two prominent conservative Republican senators employed filibustering to speak to the world about what was going on in the Senate and draw attention. And one of them wasn't even really a filibuster. So Rand Paul actually did have a filibuster, and he did actually get the Department of Justice and the president to come forward on saying that they won't drone people domestically.
to admit that I can't bomb you in your backyard when you're having a barbecue.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I can't believe the conversations we're having in this country.
It's insane. But this nuclear option was done to silence precisely
shop.
Yeah, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. Now, I got three more minutes here. Again, I think it's Fox News, but a different show with a different blonde. But this is Rand Paul talking about the Obamacare delay and the fact that the Republicans, and when I say the Republicans, I don't mean Mitch McCantnot and Johnny Boehner. I'm talking about Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and Gowdy and Amash. These guys handed Obama and Reid an out, a face-saving out to avoid this disaster that is going on now with delays and fixes and what have you, by simply delaying the whole darn thing a year, slowing down and figuring out how do we make sure this thing doesn't destroy everything. But they had to push it through. Here's 3 minutes with Rand Paul on Fox Noise, and I think it's interesting how he explains this.
A new push now for all congressmen to live under the very rules that they impose on us, regular folks in the nation, including the new regulations of Obamacare. Republican Senator Rand Paul is introducing that constitutional amendment. He joins us now. Senator, good to see you. And so what is the purpose of this?
Well, you know, ever since I ran for office, people would come up to me and say, well, you know, Congress, what makes me mad is they pass laws and then they exempt themselves. So my amendment would say that Congress shall pass no law that they exempt themselves or the president or the Supreme Court. One of the particularly galling things about Obamacare is that the chief justices who decided the case aren't going to have to live under it. They'll get special health care, and they won't have to live under Obamacare, and I think that's wrong.
And you know, the odds of this passing, right, because to get a constitutional amendment through, you need, what is it, three-fifths of the states. It's like two-thirds majority vote in both the House and the Senate, and also three-fourths of the states. So how are you going to, you know, the odds of you actually getting this through are pretty slim.
It will take an enormous groundswell, but I think there's a lot of movement among the public for this, Republican or Democrat or independent. There's also a great movement for term limits. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with Washington right now, and I think you'll find that if these were put to the American people, you'd get a 75-80% vote for term limits, and Congress shall not exempt themselves.
It's so true, and yet, you know, Congress does what it's going to do, and you know, this is an effort to hold Congress accountable. We've been talking on this show for a week now about executive accountability, and where is that? I mean, you know, we've been asking person after person, who is going to be held responsible for the disastrous rollout of Obamacare, the money that it's cost Americans, the time it's cost the American people? How do you and Congress go about exacting that?
Well, you know, I think we publicly can point out the problems and the hypocrisy.
Interestingly, the government was shut down with Democrats refusing to accept a one-year delay on the individual mandate. Now you've got a dozen of them saying, oh, guess what? It's such a horrible rollout. We're now in favor of delaying the individual mandate. So there certainly is some irony. The Democrats shut down government because they wouldn't accept a one-year delay. Now it's so bad they're actually in favor of a one-year delay.
And now, you know, looking at what happened, we just did a piece last week on how Obamacare was pushed through the U.S. Congress. And we talked about the fact that, you know, Scott Brown was elected and he ran on being the no vote that would stop Obamacare. And then Harry Reid basically changed the rules and said, well, I can pass a bill that will change one-sixth of the U.S. economy by deeming it passed. And as long as I have 51 votes, I'm good. Do you think you could undo Obamacare with 51 votes same way if the Republicans got control of the Senate?
Perhaps, but this is always the danger of these conference committees where things go together on a budget. Like right now, they're talking about convening a conference committee to get to compromise. The danger is what comes out of the conference committee can sometimes be passed with 51% vote. It makes it easier, and that's why some of us objected to the budget going unless the Democrats would agree not to raise the debt ceiling through 51%.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason for having supermajorities required was to slow things down and to have more debate and to make it more difficult for one party to run roughshod over the country.
You still have a Democrat.
Okay. All right, here's my comment. And I think that this, you know, we're both kind of high-strung in this show, which is fine. But I think that this needs to be said. Do you know why we had a revolution? We had a revolution because we had authoritarian kings and queens and royalty and blue bloods in control of our lives who were passing laws and taxes and, you know, import fees and Stamp Act and all this crap. And, oh, boy, they went after our sugar and that messed with our liquor. You know, that's what really got them riled up. That's probably a big part of it. But it's important to understand that we have gone through 10,000 years of civilized history of having people with blue blood control our everyday life, where you can live. Can you own property? Can you not own property? You know, you invent a new tool. Somebody else takes it from you. America was an idea in personal freedom. And in the last 40, you know, you can say 100 years back to, you know, the Fed. But if you look at the last 20, 30 years in this country, what we have become is exactly what our founding fathers started a revolution over. And I'm not talking, you know, I'm not trying to promote a revolution. I'm talking concept here. I'm trying to educate people. These people live above the law. They hardly ever seem to go to jail. They do crap every day in their lives that you and I would go to jail for, whether it be insider trading or living, you know, with different benefits than you and I can get. Things they do. You think about this Obamacare debacle. If a private corporation, a large one, you know, say Microsoft, Facebook, whatever, somebody who had a lot of influence in the world, IBM, and they did something that crashed our economy and cost people jobs, hurt other people's businesses, there would be lawsuits and there would be federal indictments against those people. Our economy has been, the economy fell during the end of the Bush administration. But over the last 5 years, there have been so many fear-driven, you know, from the Fed printing all this money that most people don't even understand, from the bailouts to QE 1, 2, and 3 and all that crap. But you look at what Obamacare has done to people's lives, the stress we're under, the businesses not hiring, not expanding, cutting people to part-time. This impacts people's lives. Government is supposed to be there to enhance the citizens of a country so that we can live our lives to work and prosper and start businesses and fail and get back up and do it again until we accomplish something and pass on more to our children. It is not supposed to be there to take away, to dictate, to control you, to tell you what kind of toilet you have to buy and light bulbs and what you can eat. I mean, don't people understand this is kings and queens and blue blood? We're back under post-revolution America. This is exactly how we're living. And Rand Paul nails it. You know, and I remember that bill that came out saying no more insider trading. How in the hell did it ever happen in this country, in a rule of law country, that they could do insider trading when you'd go to prison for it and all get rich on it for all these years before somebody did something about it? That was never how this country was supposed to be run.
Go ahead. Bread and circuses.
I just want to,
bread and circuses. We were distracted, and they did these things. They did these things when we weren't looking. And yes, this is neo-feudalism. It's technocratic, technological neo-feudalism, but it can't be done without your consent. Now you're saying, how does this happen? Well, it happens because most people are low-informed.
They allow it.
It isn't necessarily because most people are, you know, people are not necessarily stupid. People are not necessarily careless. Yes, there are some. But by and large, that is not who the American people are, but they're busy. You know, people have got their businesses, they've got their jobs, they've got their kids, they got their bills to pay, they're overwhelmed. And you, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, have to be the one to get them involved. They know that politics is screwing with their life in every aspect. You get arrested now if you pick your kids up from school and don't use the official systems. You get your dog shot if you happen to be at the address where the warrant was incorrectly written for and stuff like that. People know that politics is messing with their lives. They just don't know that there's anything they can do about it. Well, there is. Because the fact is, in this country, we have the power. And the Constitution is still the supreme law of the land. Now, it's insane what's going on. It's extra-constitutional, it's illegal, and the Republicans are certainly not doing anything about it. But we can. You have to find people who will champion the cause of liberty. Look at the two distinct differences here regarding Obamacare. On one hand, you've got Rand Paul, who is proposing an amendment that actually forces to happen what is supposed to already be happening, and it basically says that every law passed applies to everybody in this country. You cannot provide exemptions to this group and that group. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the whole point of a republic, is the rule of law. We are all under the same laws, and those that make the laws are especially required to follow them. But he's passing that amendment. On the other side, you got Harry Reid destroying 2.25 centuries of rules that slow down the deliberative process in the Senate and give a voice to the minority party. Now, it's kind of interesting that the current party in charge is the party that says that they champion minorities, and the other party is a bunch of white racists. But yet here we have a point where the majority party is bullying the minority party into silence. Do you really think these people are looking out for minorities in the greater culture by shutting up the minority party in their own house? Come on, think about it. So those are the two visions you've got. You've got the Harry Reid vision on one side, which is to break the rules in order to build tyranny, and Rand Paul on the other side, who feels that it's necessary to pass a law to enforce the law that's already there because they don't follow it. And the Republicans, don't think for a second the Republicans are with Rand Paul on this. The Republicans like to give out as many exceptions as the Democrats. It's just a bunch of different interests. And that's the scary thing. Now, we've talked about Obamacare now for 3 years, so everybody should be well-versed in it. We've told you what was going to happen, and now that it's happening, you kind of are like, oh, this is shocking. Well, some of us told you that this was going to happen. You have to inform these other people who have the heart in the right place but don't know what to do and get them involved and tell them you can't get involved in the 2014 midterms in September. You have to get involved now. You got to vet the candidates. You got to find the real conservatives. You got to primary the rhinos. Then you got to go toe-to-toe with the Democrats in 2014, and look at what's going on. They're illegally again delaying the rollout of enrollment next year because they're afraid that if it happens on October 15th, people will see the new ridiculously high prices for their forced premium products before the election, and the Democrats will lose. Now they're moving it to November 15th so that nobody will see how bad this thing is until after the midterms. That's illegal, but it's just another scam in managing perception, and you've got to wake people up and get them involved.
The rule of law means nothing anymore. You know, I think about this stuff, and something you said that's very important about the midterm elections. This is extremely important for people to understand. Typically, midterm elections pull about 30 to 35% of the population, the voting population, 30 to 35%. Your country's future and a sixth of your economy being taken over by Obamacare is nothing compared to every facet that Obamacare, I mean, they're up to over 20,000 pages of regulations. The law was written so they could just sit in their offices and write more laws without going through Congress. That has got to stop, number one. That was never how this country was set up to be run. You know, Rand Paul was dealing with this issue, too, was we need to write the laws that we pass, not lobbyists, not lawyers, but Congress, not the president. Holy crap. President is an administrator. He can't change the law. I don't know, what are we at, 40 items he's changed now on Obamacare illegally? But it takes so long to get through the court system that we're just standing here watching him run roughshod over the rule of law. And the Republicans won't fight it. You know, Boehner won't fight it. McConnell won't fight it. And they just keep rolling over. But midterm elections are vital. Look at what 2010 with the Tea Party movement, what it did. It gave us 30 governors, 24 full control Republican states, the House, and broke the supermajority in the Senate, even though now...
that doesn't matter.
yeah, it doesn't matter because he just broke the rules again, and everybody's going to stand around ooh and ah and Fox to do news on it, and nobody will do nothing. And there's a lot can be done. You know, and from this point forward on every bill and every committee that comes out of the Senate, the Republicans, if they had the gonads, could just basically lock the Senate down and force this thing back to where they have, you know, compromise. Because the idea of, the Republicans being able to hold up appointments and to be able to filibuster and all these different things, and the idea of not voting for cloture, McConnell, McCain, hello, you know, and giving Reid that minimal vote that he needs to pass stuff, you know, there's a lot of things they can do they don't do. They just roll over. So Reid pushes this thing through, and Rush was talking about this in that Red State article, pushes this thing through because he knows they will do nothing. Now, I guarantee if Rand Paul or Cruz or Lee was the head of the minority in the Senate, it would be a whole different conversation right now because they went there based on what their constituents voted them into office to do, and they're doing it. And they're doing it so well, they're getting attacked by, not by Democrats, they're getting attacked by Republicans who've been in power 20, 30, 40 frickin' years. 2014 is a chance to get, yeah, well, and here, this is important about 2014. Every House member is up for re-election. I don't know every detail of every person that's being primaried, but there's a lot of squishes need to go, be retired. And you got 33 senators that are up for re-election. You know, unfortunately, McCain's not, but people like Graham, and you notice how quiet Graham's been lately? Graham is,
yeah.
You know, and he's being primaried by like four people.
He's been very quiet.
He's been really quiet. And
yes,
it's important to understand, you've got to figure out who these people are that are primarying them. There is no reason in the world that Cuccinelli should have lost Virginia by 1 point, less than 2 points. That was the most disgusting. Yeah,
the Republicans did that.
Yeah. Well, they didn't do much to help, for one. For two, you actually had Republicans come out. You had Republicans come out and endorse a frickin' Democrat, the guy that was selling the Lincoln bedroom for donations.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, people. You know, people need to get
off
their rear, go down and vote. You know?
Yeah, don't give me this garbage of my vote doesn't count. Yes, they can rig the machines, they can rig the elections, but only
if they're close.
When they are very, very close. So you got to turn people out in overwhelming numbers and elect actual conservatives to crowd out the rhinos and to defeat the Democrats. And the thing is that you mentioned that McConnell didn't do anything. Well, that's not true. I mean, you know, when Harry Reid pulled this thing, and I got a clip now to play about what Harry Reid did, you know, McConnell said, the solution to this problem is at the ballot box. We look forward to having a great election in November 2014. See, that's how guys like McConnell think. They like these problems because it gives them something to campaign on that doesn't have to have any real substance. You know, they won't change this rule. But they want it. But you, they know you don't like it, so now they got something to speak against. They didn't ever do anything to stop Obamacare. Whenever it actually counted, they actually fought their own party to keep it going, because they want it to collapse so that they can run against it. Well, you know what? The sixth of our economy, our insurance system, and our medical delivery system is not something to toy with for electoral victories, Mitch McConnell, you loser. Someone's got to get rid of this guy. He's up for election. There are several candidates in Kentucky that are primarying him. They're likely to be splitting, you know, the opposition votes, so you people in Kentucky really need to focus up and find the one who's got the best chance of winning and rally behind that one. And if you're not in Kentucky, you can spend money, or you can donate your time making calls and getting people involved. But if whoever can get the most turnout in this primary against McConnell, who's a liar, and can actually beat the Democrat, would change things dramatically, even if the Republicans don't get a majority in the Senate. You would at least get a different minority leader, and hopefully someone who's actually conservative, like maybe Jeff Sessions, as opposed to Bob Corker or Mitch McCantnot or any of those other losers. So that's really important. Now, Mitch's whole thing about what Harry Reid did was, I think it's a time to be sad about what's been done to the United States Senate. Really? That's his comment? It's sad?
That was
and
it?
Then what happened? And then instead of actually doing anything to retaliate against Reid for pulling this illegal crap, right, they just handed him unanimous consent on committee issues. Unanimous consent is a way of bypassing the rules. They do it all the time to, you know, keep things going. Well, that's kind of a good thing to do when you're trying to get business done and there are regular rules of order going on. But when one of the parties, and actually one man in one of the parties, pulls this kind of crap, the Republicans should be obstructing everything. From the minute it happened, they should be obstructing everything to let him know, change it back so that we actually have a voice and we can get things done. And for those of you that don't understand what Harry Reid did, Harry Reid literally nuked the Senate. He wiped out the – there is no Senate. Right now, everything that happens in the upper chamber of our bicameral Congress is all done by one man. It is now 100% Reid all the time pushing Obama's agenda. There is no deliberative process. Here's how it went down.
Until this battle station is fully operational, we are vulnerable. The Rebel Alliance is too well equipped. They're more dangerous than you realize.
Dangerous to your Starfleet, Commander, not to this battle station.
The rebellion will continue to gain support in the Imperial Senate.
The Imperial Senate will no longer be of any concern to us. I have just received word that the Emperor has dissolved the Council permanently. The last remnants of the old Republic have been swept away.
That's impossible. How will the Emperor maintain control without the bureaucracy?
The regional governors now have direct control over their territories. Fear will keep the local systems in line. Fear of this battle station.
And what of the rebellion? If the rebels have obtained a complete technical readout of this station, it is possible, however unlikely, that they might find a weakness and exploit it.
The plans you refer to will soon be back in our hands.
Any attack made by the rebels against this station would be a useless gesture, no matter what technical data they've obtained.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
Now, that might just be science fiction. That might be a movie. It came out in 1978, known as Star Wars.
78?
But unfortunately, I'm pretty sure that's when it came out. that was from the first one. yeah, feeling old.
Make him press. Put him in charge. He's smarter than our politicians.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But, that might seem like, you know, some kind of sci-fi nightmare with a Death Star and Darth Vader, but the fact is, that's exactly the next step. By Harry Reid nuking the Senate, he's eliminated the bicameral nature of your Congress and turned it into nothing more than the president's parliament. And
so
the
he's
imperial
basically
president
Prince Harry. That's Prince Harry.
He's Prince. Yeah, he's like, you know, in Obama's court, and he gets to push and you know all the legislative agenda, and then you know have the, and pack the court so that if there's any challenge to it, it's just rubber stamped as no, this is perfectly constitutional, and there you have it. Which is precisely why our founding fathers never intended the federal government to be a check upon itself. You, Mr. and Mrs. America, you are the check. Your state and you individually are the check against federal tyranny. The federal government is a creature of the states, and the states have a right to nullify, and the states have a right to challenge, and the states have a right to dictate terms. But by nuking the Senate, and actually it goes back even further, 100 years ago, the 17th Amendment, has reduced that state power. And because you have your money confiscated and sent to D.C., and then return to your state with strings, your state is almost impotent, and it's time to reverse that order because we are coming to a crash, and the only way to stop it, well, not only to stop it, but the only way to recover quickly after it happens is to restore this federal structure. And that is up to you. Now, here's the massive hypocrisy, and this is what shows you why. Instead of being afraid now, instead of thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, cats and dogs living together, 40 days of, you know, this is not the time to panic. This is the time to realize that the massive hypocrisy these Democrats employed in order to make this happen is a sign of sheer and absolute desperation because their agenda is being thwarted and stopped by lawsuits, by courts, and by people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee. Listen to this little mouse desert weasel, Harry Reid, from 2008, talking about this very nuclear option, which he pushed on Thursday.
The Senate was set up to be different. That was the genius, the vision of our founding fathers, that this bicameral legislature, which was unique, had two different duties. One was, as Franklin said, to pour the coffee into the saucer and let it cool off. That's why you have the ability to filibuster and to terminate filibuster. They wanted to get rid of all that, and that's what the nuke option was all about.
And is there any likelihood that we're going to face circumstances like that again?
As long as I am the leader, the answer is no. I think we should just forget that. That is a black chapter in the history of the Senate. I hope we never, ever get to that again, because I really do believe it will ruin our country.
Fracking hypocrite. Can you believe that, Chris? That was him in 2008. Just unbelievable. The fact is...
Hold on.
That must have upset you. Well, look, I'll fill it until you catch your breath. I know that was pretty shocking because that was actually Harry Reid. That was 2008.
Right.
And now here we are. Here we are 5 years later, and suddenly Harry Reid pushes a button.
I was trying not to cut.
It's pretty amazing.
I was trying not to cut. And that's just one of them. All the top 10 Democrats who are walking around telling everybody how important, you know, how wonderful this bill was, or this nuclear option was now. You know, we've got recordings, and they're all out there on the Internet. I don't know what you have on the panel, but...
We played them in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, all these people, Clinton, Obama, oh, yeah, he had, and in fact, you know, I got a kick out of the Obama one, or the President Obama one, that was the most eloquent I've seen him talk, you know, without any
teleprompter
or anything else. Yeah, when he was talking about, you know, they were protesting the nuclear option because the Republicans were discussing it as an option because the Democrats were giving them hell on trying to get things done, which is
what
they're...
I don't know if they were really discussing
about.
It. I think it was a tactical threat to get them to move. Yeah, it was a tactical threat. They were threatening it. They didn't actually do it.
Yeah.
And if they had done it, they'd be just as bad as these losers. And actually, that brings up a good point, Chris. If the Republicans get this majority, are they going to undo this rule? Well, someone like McConnell, probably not. But Ted Cruz and Rand Paul would. In fact, what they should do, what the Republicans should do, assuming that you get out there, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots America, and hustle and get conservatives in to those challenges against rhinos and then defeat the Democrats and gain the Senate, what the Republicans should do is go in there and use the nuclear option to undo every unconstitutional thing done in the last 15 years and then pass a rule to go back to supermajority immediately and make it unbreakable. That would be the right thing to do. I doubt that they'll do that because, well, even if you manage to get some conservatives in there, there's still going to be a bunch of rhinos who aren't up for re-election, like Jihad Jane McComed. He'll still be there.
With the Republicans is they spend more time worrying about what the news is saying about them than what you and I as their voters and donors are concerned with. That's the problem with Republicans, or, you know, with the squishes anyway, or the rhinos.
Right. They should get over it. No one's going to like you. The media is not going to like Republicans, whether they're squishes or actual conservatives. So quit being squishes. It doesn't make anybody like you anymore. Just actually stand up for the right thing, for goodness sake.
What are they at, a 90% approval rating right now?
Yeah, I doubt it's even that high. I think it's somewhere above the paramecium as far as popularity goes. But the simple fact is that, and the reason I picked on Reid is not because Obama and Biden and Clinton and all those others didn't speak against it, but the fact is that Reid is the one that did it. That's what makes him the ultimate hypocrite. The others might be supporting it, but he actually did it at Obama's orders. He did it. Now, here's the crazy thing. You get told, oh, this is only about appointments for judges. Well, if you're willing to break the rules to pack the court, what makes you think that there are any rules at all? In fact, it was a Democrat who isn't running for re-election, I think Senator Levin, who basically said that if you're going to break the rules, there are no rules. So there's no rules in the Senate. It's a one-man show. It's Harry Reid all the time shilling for Obama. That shows you how desperate they are, because they have to pack the D.C. Circuit Court. Now, they're saying that the reason they did this was because the Republicans have been obstructing their appointments, and that's not right. Well, the D.C. Circuit Court has the least caseload out of all the circuit courts in the country. So you don't need more judges there. It's not a matter of what party they belong to. It's the fact that you don't need more judges. In fact, you should be moving judges out of the D.C. Circuit Court to some of the other courts that have twice to four times the workload. But the thing is, the D.C. Circuit Court is the one that's going to hear the cases that go up to the Supreme Court regarding Obamacare, EPA regulations, and all the other superstructure imperial police state that Obama has been building on top of George Bush's superstructure police state. And they don't want it challenged by some of the actual justices up there, so they got to pack it with sympathizers who are going to rule based on ideology and not based on law. That's what this is about. This is about ensuring the continuance of the police state and running cover for Obama. And if they're going to do it here, believe you me, if Rand Paul manages to get this amendment on the floor, they're even fighting against their own party. Senator Gillibrand has a bill regarding the sexual assaults in the military. Now, I don't know enough about it, and some Republicans are for it and some are against it, but the bottom line is that if it's something that is to be up for debate, it should be up for debate. Harry Reid isn't even putting it in there. He's not even allowing amendments. It's all what he wants, even against his own party, all the time. This is tyranny. There's no other way to call it. Now, you can freak out about it, or you can realize the only reason they're doing this, Chris, the only reason they're going to these extents, it's because it's falling apart, and people are waking up and realizing Hopey Changey isn't as Hopey Changey as we thought. And the two-party duopoly, they're not really in opposition. The only thing that they're debating about is who gets to control the police state.
Well, and that's the part. I made a comment earlier. I don't remember one of the threads. I think it was the Middle East threat on the group. And we were going around and around on things. And I made a comment. I said, here's the thing that people don't understand. If Republicans, in terms – and what I mean is the, you know, the statist, neocon, you know, warmongering that are owned by the war complex and are just, you know, are pro-Fed versus true free market. If that group gets control in 2014 and then you get a Republican rhino neocon in the presidency – we're going to have a war. It's that simple. Because everything that's going on in our economy, and every time our economy is this bad, they always go to war. And there's, you know, they're beefing up, and I don't want to get into Iran, but, you know, they're beefing up. All of a sudden, you think Iran never existed before. And all of a sudden, Iran in the news 24/7. Our country's falling apart, and we're worried about Iran. Iran's been there for a long time, and it's still going to be there for a long time. And yet it's a number one issue, because that's the boogeyman that they developed during the Cold War, you know, to focus on in the Middle East. When was the last time you heard about Iran earlier than a month ago? You know, it was like all of a sudden now it's important. Well, it isn't all of a sudden now it's important. It's been there a long time. In fact, it's one of the oldest civilizations on the history and the face of the planet. It's been there a long time. All of a sudden, it's important. Well, why? Because they're gemming up for a war, you know. And these idiots I mean, I study, and you know this, I study international stuff a lot. I study international militaries. I study international economic systems. And we don't want to go to war with Russia and China. You know, we're pretty thin right now. We're pretty tired right now. You know, the last 12, 13 years, and also being the imperial nation of the world, spread all over the flipping world, we're broke, and we do not want to take on Russia and China in the state of mind that we're in, or in the state of affairs that we're in right now. And these suckers are so insane that's the direction they're pushing us. So you get the wrong people in there in 2014 and 2016, hey, say hello to World War III. I mean, that's fine if that's what you want. But if that's what you don't want,
nobody
you
wants
need to
that.
Pay attention. Well, I know. There are a lot of freaks that do, you know?
Well, Jihad Jane McComed wants it, but we don't.
Well, neo-industrial war complex, you know, the whole thing that Eisenhower warned us against. And you got to understand me. I am not an anti-war person. You know, my personality and my nature, I'm just against unjust wars. I'm against meddling in other people's affairs. I'm against government lying to get us into wars, and I'm against this constant warfare just to keep an economic. I mean, when you build your whole economy on war, every empire in the history of the world that had an economy built on war, including Rome as one of the last ones to really study, failed because it's a failed policy because you lose the heart and soul of your country. You burn it out. You kill off your youth. I mean, there's just a thousand reasons, but these people are so insane and so maniacs, you know, that's the direction, you know, they're going to go. You know, there are people who have always been imperialistic-minded, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah, they're jingoistic. Sure, but the worst part about it is that, I mean, we're not even reaping the benefits of our imperial foreign policy. I mean, what's happening is that we're sending our young men and women to be sacrificed over the world where there's none of our legitimate interests.
Putting us in debt.
And put us in debt, and then, you know, a few corporations and connected bankers make all the money. At least if we're going to go rape and plunder the world, I mean, at least bring the booty back here and let us share the wealth.
Well,
but no, this is the worst kind of imperial situation.
Somebody else gets the oil contracts after it's all said and done. I mean, come on. That reminds me of what's his name? You're fired. What's his name?
You're fired. Donald Trump.
The rich guy. Yeah, Trump. He says, what the hell is wrong with our politicians? He goes, if you're going to go into some other country, interfere with their politics, get involved in, you know, whether you're over there to protect them and run out some bad, you know, the supposed bad
spread
guys.
Democracy.
Whatever the game is. Yeah. You know, whatever game you're playing, he says, get paid for it. You know, I mean, quit spending your resources.
At least that.
You know, to save these. And then they burn your flag, you know, after you leave and then give the oil contracts to somebody else. How stupid can you be?
And then you send them our money to bail them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the crazy part.
And Rand Paul said it a million times.
You
know, in the old days of imperial expansion, I mean, if you study history, in the old days of imperial expansion, the host country, you know, the expanding country, whether it was England or Rome or whoever, they actually made money off of war.
Right.
We're destroying our economy and our future off of war, other people's wars who don't even like us. I mean, it's just, are you kidding me? You know?
Well, it's because we're the host, and there is a parasite, chiefly the Federal Reserve, and it chills in both parties that have been, you know, going at this. Listen,
make money. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, they're making money at our expense. I mean, the connected people are making money. The senators are making money. Look, Mitch McConnell had a net worth of like $400,000 when he became senator. He's worth like over $17 million today. You do the math. Now, here's the thing. We're running out of time, but I want to get real quick. We've had a couple of Rand clips. I want to get to Ted Cruz talking about the delay and how it ties in with the nuclear option. It's pretty good. It's only 3 minutes long, but it's important because these are the guys who are articulating the conservative position. They are actually doing things, or at least trying to do things, even though their own party keeps shutting them down, trying to do things to actually move the ball back in the right direction towards the Republic. We need to send in reinforcements in 2014 for people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, and be clear about something. It is not about them. It is not about their personalities, whether you like them or don't like them, or his wife does this, or his son did that, or his dad was whatever. It is not about them. It is about the principles for which they are standing, and they're the only ones up there. Right now they're the minority of the minority fighting for your liberty. Mm-hmm. You've sent them as your tributes right into the Hunger Games in the heart of the Capitol, and instead of watching them get slaughtered over and over again and taking the arrows for you and your liberty, you need to be supporting them, you need to be thanking them, and you need to be sending in reinforcements in 2014 so that we can, if not fix this thing, at least start moving back in the right direction so that we can go through this economic disaster that is coming and come out better for it on the other side with a republic, or fall into the dark hole of history where we will be a scrapped empire. That's what's going to happen. See, this is how important this is.
Let me throw something in there. Go. This is really important for people to understand. It's not a question of are we going to go through another crash. It is a question of when and how we recover, because what you've experienced the last 5 years is a bad recovery. Now, if you study history, American history, all the way back, we've had ups and downs, you know, cycles, ups, downs, progress, backwards, you know, crashes, I mean, wars. We've been through all this crap before. When you had the right leader, i.e., like in the Reagan era, who came in after one of these messes, and he made all the right adjustments, you know, by freeing up people's money, taxes, you know, capital gains, you know, taking regulations down so businesses could expand and prosper and take the risk, then recovery can happen very quickly. And that's the question. The question is not will it happen, it's when and how we're going to recover from it. That's the question. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, before you have 1921 and 1929. We had a crash in both of those years. One of them, it took us 18 months to get out of it. The other one, it took us nearly 17 years and a global war. It's your choice, and it depends on who you put in power and how you act locally. And remember something, when this kind of chaos and shift happens, there's either going to be a clampdown of a massive police state from D.C., or there's going to be a breakdown in that ability to do anything, and therefore people are fearing chaos. Remember something. In this country, we have 50 governments, at least. You have your locals and counties and all that stuff, but major scale, you have at least 50 governments. So even if Harry Reid actually nuked D.C., not just the Senate, but actually wiped out the whole city and everybody's gone and D.C.'s gone and we have no government, every one of us would be just fine because we each have a state government and a state legislature and a governor and police force. I wish we didn't have police forces. Sheriffs would be better. But in other words, law and order will continue. We don't need the federal government there. Now, I'm not advocating getting rid of the federal government. There are certain things that it is supposed to do. It's not doing them, but there are certain things it's supposed to do, and there are many things it's not supposed to do. We have to put it back in the right order, and there are a few people up there who are doing that. You know, Justin Amash is one of the targets of these so-called right-wing PACs like Conservative Victory Project and Main Street USA and all this crap. They're trying to take him out because they don't like what he's doing. He almost got the House to box in the NSA for spying on you. Not on terrorists, not on foreign governments, but on American people in violation of the Constitution. He almost got it to happen, so they're trying to get rid of him. They're trying to get rid of people like Gowdy. They're trying to get rid of Cruz and Rand Paul. Of course, they're not up for election this year, but you get the idea. You have to look at this as a war, and you've got to pick your champions, and you've got to support them and make sure that they're the right ones. Don't fall for another Marco Rubio, but find the real ones like Amash and Gowdy and Cruz and Lee and Rand Paul. Here's Ted Cruz.
And joining us now is the Republican Senator from Texas, Ted Cruz. Thanks for being with us.
Patty Ann, it's good to be with you.
So, first of all, your reaction to this latest development?
Well, it's not surprising. They want to move as much as they can after the next election. They're doing everything they can to run away from Obamacare because the wheels are falling off. This thing isn't working.
So, obviously, you've been a vocal critic of Obamacare, fought against it on constitutional grounds, tried to get it defunded. People are asking now, what is the Republican alternative?
Well, the Republican alternative is empowering patients to make your own medical choices free of government interference. And I think the best option is two steps. Number one, repealing Obamacare, because it's not working. It is millions of Americans have lost their health insurance because of Obamacare, have lost their jobs, it's not working. And at the same time we would replace it, the most important thing to replace it with is allowing the interstate purchase of health insurance, which would create a nationwide marketplace that gives consumers more choices and lower prices. You know, if you want to expand access, you want to lower prices, you want to expand choices, what Obamacare does is it restricts choices and raises prices, and it's not working.
Right. All right. We want to move on now to another historic move yesterday in the Senate. Majority Leader Harry Reid invoking the so-called nuclear option, changing the rules of the Senate to make it harder for the minority party to block certain presidential appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, one of the most immediate concerns that people have about this is the D.C. Circuit Court.
Sure.
Right
sure.
now it's tied 4-4 with mm-hmm. three vacancies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If those are filled by Democrats, it's 7-4 mm-hmm. in favor of whatever mm-hmm. regulations this court controls, federal regulations. So,
what we saw yesterday was a replay of actually what happened with Obamacare. It was a brazen partisan abuse of power. And it was designed to do a couple of things. Number one, to change the topic. The Democrats want to talk about anything other than the millions of people who are hurting because of Obamacare. But number two, it replayed, you know, just as the president said, if you like your plan, you can keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Reid has said repeatedly this year that he would under no circumstances use the nuclear option to change the Senate rules. And just like President Obama did, he broke his promise, he broke his word. But you put your finger on the immediate end goal here, which is they want to pack the court, and in particular pack the D.C. Circuit, to cover up the president, and this is one of the most troubling aspects of this administration, has been lawless, has been picking and choosing which part of the statutes he'll follow, which parts he won't, and this administration does not want to be held to account for disregarding the law by an impartial judiciary, so they're trying to pack the courts with judges that they hope will just rubber stamp the president's refusal to follow the law.
The president's refusal to follow the law. There was Senator Ted Cruz eloquently putting together the Obamacare delays and the nuclear option and the court packing, and that's the takeaway from this week. That's the game they're playing, and it's because they are desperate, which means it's not time to let up, it's not time to curl up and cry, it's time to do a full court press. And keep in mind, the enemy is not really the Democrats. I mean, they're a given enemy, Obama's a given enemy, they are trying to destroy this country, but that's not really who you have to go after. The real enemy is the ones that let them get away with it without even putting up a fight, and that is the Republican leadership, the rhinos, the squishes that keep surrendering and surrendering and surrendering while they tell you that they're up here doing all this stuff to help you. They're liars, and they need to be gone, and you need more people like Ted Cruz. What do you think of that, Chris?
Well, yeah, Cruz is extremely articulate. He's no dummy. I mean, the guy was a solicitor, what do they call him, solicitor general, which is like the attorney general of the state of Texas. He took on the Bush administration. I mean, you know, he was some of the first early stages of Obamacare. I mean, Cruz is smart, and he gets the Constitution, and he gets the limitation the federal government is supposed to have, and that's the kind of people we need in there. Like you've said several times, which is extremely important. It isn't about who you like. You know, this is not, you know, American Idol or Dancing with the Stars or whatever, you know, or reality TV. This is about, you need numbers in the House, numbers in the Senate, and then ultimately you need a president who is a constitutionalist who will rein in the federal government, because I just don't think people understand how far we've come and how bad our economy really is. And you know, anybody who's ever studied the fall of the USSR right before Yeltsin took over, and then what happened during the Yeltsin reign, and then when Putin took over and he had all that corruption to deal with, and, you know, from bankers, investors, outside enterprises, they had sold Russia off. And Putin had to clean that mess up. And it takes a strong leader with a strong national heart that says, I'm going to save my country. And I don't know if that's too strong to say that. You know, some days I wish I could you know, just scream at the top of my lungs, wake the hell up. You know, this is way past anything. Whatever you, however bad you think it is, you're wrong. Because it isn't just Obamacare. It's the whole economic system. Like I said, most people don't even understand the whole QE thing. You know, the I mean, they're spending, they're printing and buying government bonds to the tune of over $1 trillion a year on top of the money they're borrowing from other countries around the world by selling them government bonds. These bonds are worthless. And most of the countries around the world who are sick of our bad, you think you're sick of our politics? These other countries who have been beholden to the U.S. trade dollar, U.S. petrodollar, you know, since the Second World War, are getting sick of our politicians too, because it's screwing up their economies, and it's making, they're paying the price for our bad decisions, and they want their countries back, they want their own economies back, and they're making moves to change this stuff. And they don't even get to vote.
They don't even get to vote for these jerk-offs. At least we do. Chris, real quick, we've got 18 minutes live, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to discuss more of this bond stuff with Peter Schiff in overtime. So for all of you listening live, and there's a bunch of you, if you want to keep listening live, you've got 18 minutes to call in. The phone number is 646-649-1013. You have to call in before midnight Eastern and listen on your phone as a phone, not as a mobile device or an Internet browser, if you want to listen live. Otherwise, catch us in archives. And remember something. We broadcast these shows live Sunday nights, 10 p.m. Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, 10 p.m. Eastern, Sunday nights. But you can listen to it anytime, and we thank all of you who've shared it and spread the word before the show airs. But by all means, you can get it out after the show airs. You can keep sending it out because it's always available on the Liberty's Thunder page and Blog Talk Radio. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, type in Liberty's Thunder, our page comes up, you go in there, and if you scroll down the page, every single show is listed. And when we go into overtime, which we have about 45 minutes after the show ends broadcasting, you can listen to that in your browser. So we're going to do that and hopefully get out of here before it gets too late. But please keep sharing this information, getting it out there. We are stringing things together in a way that's relevant to grassroots conservatives. And remember, an authentic conservative is two-thirds libertarian. So you all have to learn to get along, work together to get the right candidates elected. You don't have to like everything about them. You certainly not like their personality, but you need to find people who are actually standing up for the Constitution, standing up for liberty, and at least send in reinforcements so that Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Justin Amash have more people who can caucus with them to either stop the growth or roll it back already. It is very, very important. This nuclear option is showing you that the tyranny is real, but it's also showing you that it's desperate. They're losing the people, and they're freaking out, which is the time to press. But if you want to win 2014, you have to get busy right now. If you have money to donate, donate it. But don't send any money to the Republican Party. You send it to the individual candidates who you vetted for their conservatism. And if you're not sure what conservatism is, it isn't a particular policy. It isn't a particular ideology. It is a way of looking at things based on fundamental principles. Last Thursday, we did a show trying to work through Russell Kirk's 10 points of conservatism. We got the two of them. We'll do some more shows on that. But check that out on our page, Liberty's Thunder on Blog Talk Radio, and share that information with people. People really need to understand conservatism. You say the word conservative, people think Republican, they think George Bush, they think Mitch McConnell, they think John Boehner, and they freak out. But if you explain to them point by point what conservatism is, you will find by and large the American people are innately conservative. And if they started voting that way and being active that way, and if there is nobody in your district who's running who's a conservative, find one or be the one yourself and get in there and make it happen. We have a republic to save. Everybody can do something, and that's what this show is about. That's why we're thundering for liberty. And we're going to talk economics in overtime, but let's try to wrap up and explain this nuclear option. So,
yeah, I didn't mean
Chris, you got any other comments?
Sorry.
No, no, that's fine. It's fine. It's important. It all ties in together.
Yeah.
And speaking of 2014, now here's something. I think this is something people have to understand about 2014. Not only does it start now, but you have to build an army. And in an army, you don't have only foot soldiers. You don't only have infantry. You need cavalry. You need air support. You need mechanics.
Leadership.
You need people in the mess halls. You need leadership. So it is not everybody has to be exactly this thing. It is everybody using their time, talent, and treasure to further whatever the cause of that body is. There is somebody out there who some people love and some people hate. Either way, whether you love her or hate her, she is a player. She is actually possibly one of the people most responsible for getting you Ted Cruz into the Senate to actually almost, if it wasn't for the rhinos surrendering, almost delay Obamacare until after next year's elections. And that is the former governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin. Here she is talking about the nuclear option.
The Senate Democrats this week changed the rules so that to confirm a presidential nominee, except for the Supreme Court, it will now take a simple majority of 51 votes instead of a supermajority of 60 votes. It turns out that 79 Obama nominees have faced at least one vote to end debate, have faced the possibility of a filibuster. 79, more than double the 38 Bush nominees during his 8 full years in office. Question, doesn't any president, Republican or Democrat, have the right to be able to name his team unless a nominee is just wildly outside the mainstream?
Well, there are a lot of wildly outside the mainstream nominees and pals of Barack Obama that he wants to see help him usher in an agenda to transform America. So that's one thing that Congress has done right, and that is oppose some of these nominees. As for this rule change that some people are calling a nuclear option under Senate rules, you know, I guarantee this week, Thanksgiving dinner, people sitting around their tables, we're not going to be talking about the president blessing the thwarting of a balance of power in Congress with new Senate rules called the nuclear option. People are going to be talking about our failed big government policies that will bankrupt this country. So this distraction, this new talking point in the media and with Congress, with senators, and with the president blessing this action, it's a distraction, and it's a lot of double standard and Democrat hypocrisy, because just a few years ago they were so anti-nuclear option. They were against any thought of Republicans ever considering changing these rules, and yet now, you know, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So American people, they don't care about distractions like that. They're not in that inside baseball Senate rules stuff. They want government to be back on our side. They want it to get out of our lives. And in order to do that, we need those who will not fundamentally transform America, but will fundamentally restore what's right about America. We do that by having good judicial nominees and nominees in these regulatory agencies and elsewhere. So this new rule change, it stinks.
You want me to comment on that?
Roll with it.
One thing I want to say about Palin, and you know, I spent, I don't know, it's not half my life anymore because I've been down south for a few years, but I spent a good chunk of my life up there, 21 years, and my wife was born there, my kids are born there, so I get Alaska. I know what she dealt with. I know the corruption. I know the good old boys network that she talks about. Palin's tough, and I don't know the crap that she took, when she was nominated for the vice president role, the abuse that her and her family took and what they did to her as governor. And a lot of people don't understand what went on. I won't get into details someday maybe. But that would have folded a lot of people. And what did she do? She got up and fought. She made some adjustments. She went out there. She formed a PAC. She started speaking all over the country. She was a major, major, major player in the Tea Party movement. Major player. She didn't just get Ted Cruz elected. She got a lot of people elected, helped them get elected in 2010. So this is very important to understand. She's on fire. Now, I watched her through the primary, and I was trying to figure out what was her game, what was her play in the primary, and she seemed to be, you know, kind of holding back. But I think a lot of people knew that no matter what they did, that Romney was going to be pushed through. And I believe there's a lot of key people. It's one of those things where you have to kind of look back and piece it together because it was a little vague going through it. But she's ready to fight. And with the Cruz win, which was off 2010, you know, it was 2012, but with the Cruz win and her influence even in Rand's election and everything else, I think she's geared up for bear hunting. I really do. And I think it's important to keep an eye on her because wherever she's working is where there's going to be a lot of energy, a lot of money, and she's picked good people. She is a kingmaker, and that's important. No matter what you think about her personally, no matter what you think about her talking style, does she get the job done? Does she stand for solid, hardcore American principles, Constitution? Yes, yes, yes. Check the box. Get over it and fight. Because if we don't get the right people in there, it doesn't matter if it's Republicans or Democrats. We are moving towards total socialism. That's the direction we're going. So if you don't want that, you got to get behind people who are making things happen. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, she's definitely making things happen. She does talk like Yoda, but maybe she's a Jedi Master and she can pull it off, you know.
She's tough.
But the fact is that it's not, again, just to be clear, and this is how you have to really start to understand things, because our culture is so dominated by media sound bites
and
American Idol, that it's all about, you know, celebrity. You know, it's a bunch of celebutards running around showing you their underwear, and we're all focused on this personality crap. It's not about Sarah Palin's personality. It's not about Ted Cruz's personality. It's not about Rand Paul's personality, about who you feel comfortable with and who you like. All right, Chris Christie said, I don't think people go down a list and mark, you know, what someone has done and figure out what their issues are and then vote that way. What I found, people vote if they like you and if they trust you. That's how people vote. Well, that's a bunch of crap. Do not fall for the cult of personality. This is not about Sarah Palin. What she said right there was correct about the nuclear option, and the people that she is helping elect are people who believe in the same principles our founding fathers did. That is the only way you're going to right this republic. If you want liberty, you have to get people who understand liberty into positions of power so that they can actually restrain the power that has been taken by the power-hungry morons that have been elected there before. And you have to act locally and at your state level. But there is a big problem here. The power has shifted so much to the national level, and now with the nuclear option and what George Bush did when he was president, it's been going on actually for 40 years or more, the presidency has unprecedented power. And the only way you're going to check that is by restoring a strong bicameral Congress. This guy, who probably shouldn't be in the White House, right, this guy who shouldn't be in the White House and who could probably be impeached on any number of things, won't be, especially now that Harry Reid has completely nuked the Senate. He's going to be there until January 2017. That is a fact. It's a crappy fact, but it is a fact. But the way you can box him in is by sending in more conservatives. The reason Harry Reid nuked the Senate is a desperate measure because they are failing in foisting this tyranny on people. A lot of the people that fell for the Hopi Changey bullcrap have realized that it is exactly that, and that he's as much of a corporatist and as much of a warmonger as his predecessors. But the fact is that when you plant the flag based on personality, then you defend it because you don't want to admit that you made a mistake. So some people are going to defend Obama simply because they bought his bullcrap, and now they don't want to say that they were wrong or that he lied. They say, that wasn't untruth. It wasn't a complete statement. No, he's a friggin' liar. All right? And it's the same for all of you who voted for Mitt Romney. Get over it. You screwed up. All right, now get busy and get conservatives in there. If you supported Perry in the last election, or Kane, or Bachman, they didn't go anywhere. Get over it. It's not about personality, and you didn't, you know, your team didn't lose because I supported the wrong one. Just look at the principles and the issues. This nuking option of the Senate is a sign of desperation. It is the time to go full court press on these people, and what Sarah Palin is doing is getting conservatives elected. Help her. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean send money to Sarah PAC. if you have it and you want to, great. If not, but you can work. You can door knock. You can get other people involved. You can vet the candidates based on conservative principles, not on their flowery rhetoric, because Marco Rubio sounds real conservative, and then he gets in there and he sounds real good on Obamacare. But then when it comes to foreign policy, he's a neocon who wants to nuke the world. He's like a mini John McCain up and coming. You look at Paul Ryan, boy, he's a fiscal conservative. Really? Paul Ryan's a fiscal conservative? The deal he's making on the budget now is pretty much spend a boatload of money that we don't have, and because it's 1% less than the increase that they wanted, that's somehow a victory. That's not a victory. He's a liar. Remember, this is a guy who gave an impassioned speech about TARP, for TARP, and then he ran as mini Mitt Romney. So find the real conservatives and get them in power. Paul Ryan should not be coming back.
Mitt.
Wisconsin, you need to retire him. Ohio, retire John Boehner. Remember something, every 2 years, the entire House of Representatives is up for re-election and a third of the Senate. Find the races where you can get a real conservative in there and win. Increase the numbers so that we can start righting the ship. That's what Sarah Palin is talking about.
Go. I want to add something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the things I want to talk about was, you know, we've had this conversation about term limits before. One of the reasons the founding fathers didn't think of it, or they thought of it and they didn't follow through with it, was because in those days people went to government, they went to Washington, D.C., and it was a drain on their natural lives, you know, their businesses, their homes, their families, and so they went to serve and then go home. And so up until recently, you know, several decades ago, the turnover rate in Congress was much higher, because people did their duty, and then they went home. And now we've got guys in there for 20, 30, 40 years. So this whole concept in people making tremendous amount of wealth, like you were talking about McConnell, from $400,000 to $18 million, you know, it has become a whole corrupt system of power control, insider trading, warmongering, you know, getting paid off for which corporations you back and take care of, or unions if you're on the other side, or both. And that is what the problem is. And so when you get people, you want to think about, and I love what Palin says, and I think it's a very key terminology, and that is fundamental transformation, which is basically moving us to social Marxism, or fundamental restoration. And I love that statement. I remember the first time she came out with it, because that's what we want. Do you want your freedom to live your life, to make your own choices, to buy the light bulb you want and the toilet you want and eat the damn food you want and drive the car you want and live in the area that you want to live? Because if you let these people go far enough, they're going to start telling you what job you can have and where you can live. That's what's
yep.
coming.
Or they're going to kill you. Or they're going to kill you. All right, this is what we're going to do, because we've only got a minute and a half left live. So if you want to listen live, you've got to call in, 646-649-1013. Otherwise, you can catch us in archive. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder, and all of the shows are right there in hyperlinks. You can listen to your browser. You can listen to your mobile device. And right below the scrolling graphics, there's a download link. Just right-click on that, and you get an MP3. Send it to people. Share it with people. Get it out there. This is information that is not being put together in this way. When you hear it on TV, Fox Noise, Communist News Network, MSLSD, whatever, they string it together in a way that confuses you and disperses the information. We string it together from a conservative perspective to get you to realize who you need to support and how you take action. We're going to roll out on this nuclear option with Rand Paul for 3 minutes, and then right after that I'm going to bring it back with Ron Paul talking about the nuclear option and how it pertains to appointments. Because we're not only talking about judges, we're also talking about appointments with people like Janet Yellen, who's going to be the, you know, new Fed chair, and the kind of disaster that's going to be. Then Chris and I are going to comment briefly. We're going to talk about global economics and how this is gearing up to be a magnificent disaster, which is why we need to right this ship, and then we're going to bring it on home. Here's 3 minutes with Rand, and we're going to back-to-back that with Ron Paul.
Senate Democrats have now pulled the trigger on what's called the nuclear option in a dramatic and historic move. Just moments ago, the Senate voted to change the rules of the United States Senate, making it easier to end filibusters. The Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he took the action because of Republicans blocking President Obama's nominees. The Republicans, however, call it a power grab and a smokescreen to shift focus away from Obamacare. Let's discuss what's going on. Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is joining us from Capitol Hill. We just heard Harry Reid make the case for this historic decision. I want to get your reaction. Go ahead, Senator.
Well, you know, I think what we really need is an anti-bullying ordinance in the Senate. I mean, now we've got a big bully. Harry Reid says he's just going to break the rules and make new rules. It's never been done this way before. Typically, you have to have a two-thirds vote to change the rules, and there has to be consensus, and there's tradition. But he's breaking the rules to get his way. Meanwhile, we have a bill right now, and we have several amendments lined up, but he's disallowing amendments. He's got to have everything his way. He's got to control everything. This is more about them trying to control the agenda and shift it away from Obamacare than it is anything else.
Well, he makes the point that you, the Republicans, have blocked the nominations of three potential judges on the U.S. District Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., for no reason other than you don't want the president to have these nominees in place. They would be influential judges for many years to come. These are lifetime appointments. And he says this is totally unfair on the Republican part.
Well, it's untrue what he's saying, because frankly, the argument we're using is the same argument that he and the Democrat minority argued in 2006 when they said the caseload for the D.C. Circuit has dropped so precipitously that what we really need is to transfer some of those judges to other circuits that are busier. And that's what we've offered to do, which is a compromise. But what he's saying is, I'm in charge here, I'm the bully, and I'm going to get my way, or I'm going to change the rules. And he had to actually break the rules in order to change the rules. Never been done. He's breaking with hundreds of years of precedent to do this. And really, frankly, in doing so, he's causing more discord and disharmony up here, and there'll be more dysfunction, I think, because of it. So right now, we have a very tight and closed process. We've got one guy in charge of the Senate, and basically, he's become the dictator of the Senate. He's going to bend and break the rules until he gets his way, but he also is not going to let any amendments come from the minority. So we have a really tight ship up here. But then that good things like Senator Gillibrand's amendment may get cast aside, not because of me, but because they won't allow an open process of debate and amending.
The Senate committee, as we just announced, approved Janet Yellen's nomination as the next Fed chair, despite the fact that some Democrats are now actually turning against her. More on that in a moment. But with today's abolishment of some filibuster rules in the Senate, is her approval assured? And if so, what can we expect with her at the helm? Joining us now for First on Fox Business is former Texas Congressman Dr. Ron Paul. Wonderful to see you, Dr. Paul. Thanks for coming
in. Thank you.
Well,
nice to see you.
First of all, on this rule change, some people had said it was coming. Others said they thought it was a little too radical, even for Harry Reid. What do you think about it?
I think it's radical. I think, you know, reversing and canceling out Jefferson's rules have been around for a bit. Now, I think, and they talk about minor judges, but I think that they're making it so that they can get her appointed with a majority vote rather than going with the 60.
Well, let me just stop you right there. So you think the rule change specifically was because of the vote for her, for Janet Yellen? That's why they changed the rules?
There's no way for me to know, but I speculate that that's a very strong possibility. It seems like she's a much more important person than some of these minor judges. Hardly anybody in the country knows which judges they're talking about. I think the best I can tell, it will apply to Yellen under the new rule, which means it makes it easier. And, you know, that vote was not overwhelming.
And we'll talk about that. But again, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you do have a source inside the U.S. Senate, your son, Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul. Was he planning to filibuster Janet Yellen?
I do not know that with certainty. I know what he has said, and he had talked about it, and I know he doesn't like her monetary policy. I dislike the system and think she's more of the same, only worse. But he thinks she's really a lot worse, you know, that she's a really strong inflationist. And I don't think she hides that. You know, I keep thinking we're going to continue with the QEs, and we're up to, what, QE3 now. But I think we're more likely to have another QE than we are to have tapering. So maybe next year when she gets control of this thing, we're going to have QEY. That's what I'm anticipating.
Well, even some Democrats, we expect you to say that and your son Rand Paul, but even some Democrats have turned against QE and against her specifically. Specifically, Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, voted against her. And this is what he said. Her views and beliefs to continue quantitative easing despite a failure to see any real gains greatly troubles me. Do you think there will be other Democrats besides Senator Manchin coming over to that view?
Well, I think that's very possible. This to me is very impressive because it means that they're not buying into all the propaganda. I mean, why are these conventional politicians talking this way and worried about QE? That means they're worried about inflation, yet our government and our Fed says, oh, there's no inflation, don't sweat it. We have a lot of room, and yet here we have a growing number of people concerned about the inflationary inflationary policies of what they're doing with this massive purchase of bonds. So I would say it's a healthy wake-up call, and I'm sure she'll be appointed, but I think the discussion is going to be very, very valuable.
Yeah. Now, it's not only Democratic senators and congressmen. There are also some former Fed officials who have been coming out and speaking out against this policy. In her views, we had that piece in the Wall Street Journal about a week ago by the guy, Andrew Hussar, who was responsible for a lot of the purchases of the mortgage-backed securities by the Fed. He said, I'm sorry, America. I've come to recognize that QE, for what it really is, the greatest backdoor Wall Street bailout of all time, from a former Fed official.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I interviewed on my Ron Paul channel and found it fascinating what he had to say, because he was in charge of the QE1, where he was literally in charge of purchasing $1.2 trillion worth of bonds. And I was kidding him. I said, you know, you're bigger than the U.S. Congress put together. His package right there, he had control of more money than the U.S. Congress did.
Wow.
That's how astounding the Federal Reserve System is, all done in secrecy. Hopefully we'll get more transparency. Matter of fact, that came up in Yellen's hearing because somebody did ask about audit the Fed bill, and of course she says, no, I'm for transparency, but I'm not for that bill.
Yeah.
So I think we're making great progress because we're a long way off from, you know, settled markets in spite of what the apparent boom is doing now, and the stocks are doing well and all this. But I know that there's a lot of people that feel the uncertainty, and I think that
certainly
that's
on Main
justified.
Street. Yeah, certainly on Main Street there is a lot of uncertainty. Okay, on the Fed audit thing, some people in defense of the Fed will say, hey, look, Dodd-Frank has specific measures in it to assure that there is enough auditing done of the Fed, to which you say what?
I say the bankers get to write most of those regulations. So every time we have a crisis, we write more regulations, and that seems to hinder the recovery. It started with SECs in the 30s, and, of course, there was Sarbanes-Oxley when we had the crisis 10 years ago, and now we have more of this. Regulations can't overcome bad mistakes, and this is sort of what's happening with Obamacare, just more and more regulations of central economic planning, which is unachievable. And so all the regulations in the world will just confuse things. It will dampen the enthusiasm. It chases business away, costs more money, and that's one of the major reasons why we have the economy doing so poorly. So, no, that can't save it.
Gotcha.
It just props it up. If it temporarily helps, it just delays it and makes the crisis that much worse.
Dr. Ron Paul, by the way.
Man, oh, man, this is one of the conversations that I wish more people would take more time and dig in and learn. And one of the better organizations where you can get a tremendous amount of information is Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S. Ludwig von Mises, Australian economics. And they do a great job at educating, because here's the problem with Americans. They don't have a damn clue how our economic system works and how our money supply, we don't have money anymore. We have currency. And they don't understand, you know, what happened with the gold standard. They don't understand what the Fed is, you know, which is neither federal nor do they have a reserve, you know, Federal Reserve Bank. You know, and if you go back in history and you study Jackson, who shut down the charter for the second Bank of America, which at the time was the largest financial institute in the world, and he shut it down and paid off the national debt, first time in history. And the reason is because our founding fathers were very, very concerned about these central banks, because these banks are not owned and controlled by the government. They're private banks, private bankers, most of them from Europe anymore, who knows. But they play, every time you go through one of these crashes, there always seems to be banks involved, and there always seems to be a bunch of government regulations involved. And you think about, you know, the concept of the Fed was, oh, this will smooth out the market so we don't go through such, you know, deep highs and lows in the market. Well, since 1913, how many highs and lows have we gone through? How many wars have we gone through? All this stuff is tied together. And you need to educate yourself on this, because what's coming, and I said it earlier on the show, I kept leading us back into the financial conversation because it's important for people to understand. It is not, will something happen? Are we going to go through another correction? It's not, well, we might not. And you know, you could argue with me and say, oh, yeah, but I hear the stock market's up and it's hitting record highs, and it's all fake money. The Fed is printing $85 billion a month buying the bonds, you know, which basically by the time inflation hits will be worth half of what they are at payout or less, and they're paying no interest. So the Fed has to buy them. And when you talk about debt, like when you deal with China or Russia or Japan or whoever's buying our debt, what that means is they're buying our bonds, our government bonds, you know, whether it's a 30-year fixed rate, blah, blah, blah. You know, these countries, and this is very important when we get into this Peter Schiff video, or audio, sorry, you can watch the video online, but this guy predicted the last crash. He's an Austrian economics guy. He's big in the gold market. Doesn't mean he doesn't have stocks or understand that, but that, you know, obviously gold and silver and precious metals is very important to him. He gets it. He predicted the last crash. And amidst a massive flow of negative and people criticizing, laughing at him, and they didn't laugh at him after the crash happened because he laid it out exactly what was going to happen. Now, for the last, ever since the supposed recovery, he's been predicting the next crash, and he explains exactly why he thinks the way he thinks. He explains exactly what they're doing with this money supply and printing money and buying debt and buying bonds, and you know, and like I said, there's a lot of people don't understand this stuff. Go to Mises, you can dig up all kinds of videos. I know on the group we've got a ton of stuff. I probably have more storage on the group on this financial economic issue than anything else, because all these other things come and go. But if our economy doesn't survive, then none of this other crap doesn't matter. The news of the day is going to be totally different when we go through a 20-30% drop in our economy. And inflation hasn't even begun to hit yet. Yeah, we've had some inflation. If you go down to the grocery store and you look at milk and eggs and cheese, or you go to Home Depot, I see it as a builder. You know, I know supplies like my wife knows the grocery store, you know, when I go into the building supply companies. And I see a 20, 15, 20, 25% increase in cost or price. You know, which means that the devaluation is already occurring, but the big one hasn't even begun to occur because all this printed money and all this borrowed money is staying up in the upper echelon, up in the banks and the investors. That's why the stock market looks good. It's not moving into the economy. The moment those trillions of dollars moves down into the economy and interest rates change, the true inflation is going to hit. And there's another factor, and I don't want to circumnavigate Peter Schiff because he's the expert, I'm not. But he talks, and we've talked about this, Rex, you and I have talked about this a lot, the fact that there's two issues. One is printing money, and when are they going to stop? Because you know the moment they stop, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket, which means they almost can't stop, which is insane because what they're doing is the most destructive I've ever seen in the history of this country in terms of how they you know, try to fix a economic issue, number one. Number two, what happens when these other countries go, we're tired of buying your bad debt, you know, i.e. China? And that leads right into the next, the next vid. So anyway, you're a lot smarter on this stuff than I am. I just wanted to roll on it a little bit.
Well, we all have to get smarter on it. And don't be intimidated because of the word economics was used, okay? This is basic, simple stuff, which if you run a household, you know. Now, some of the terminology might be confusing, and you don't have to get into that. You don't need a course in macroeconomics and terminology and calculus to get this stuff. Start where Chris told you to go, Mises.org. And the best place to start, very simple, it's available free of charge as a PDF, or you can buy it from them or buy it from Amazon. Go to Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. It's very accessible, very simple to understand, and it's a good basic intro into real Austrian economics. You have to understand something. There are two things that are very, very, very important, and they are your responsibility. Three things. The first one is virtue. If we are not a virtuous culture, if we do not aspire to justice and higher things in a good order, we are doomed to fail. The second thing is know your constitution and know how your government is supposed to work. You can't elect the right people and measure their record and their policies if you don't know the Constitution and how it's supposed to work, including the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers and the ratifying conventions. And three, basic economics. And Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson is a great start. The group Chris referenced is Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. I highly recommend you go there and join it right now. That's Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. And all of these things, links to Mises and Schiff and all that stuff, is available on our show page. The address is Liberty Thunder on Facebook. It says the Tex and Rex Show because I submitted a change to Facebook, and they have to approve it, and they haven't done that because Facebook is a nightmare. But nevertheless, it says the Tex and Rex Show, which is what the show used to be called, but the address is Liberty's Thunder. And then go to the Tex, Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia, which is the militia of Liberty's Thunder, and all of these clips are there so that you can reference them and read about it. It's very important you understand these things. Now, the media has you focused right now on Iran and a nuclear threat, one that's actually easily thwarted without a regional war. We could completely cripple their nuclear capability without a regional war, but they want a regional war. But the reason that they're pushing this Iran thing right now is so that no one pays attention to China. The Middle East isn't really about the Middle East, and Africa isn't really about Africa. It is about who controls the resources, and it's actually a proxy fight with Russia and China, both of whom are becoming militarily stronger and more stable in their economics than we are, and that is a very dangerous place for these United States. The Russians are winning the diplomatic war right now because our foreign policy incompetence, pushed by neocons and managed by a worthless Nobel Prize holder and treasonous John Kerry, and the Chinese are winning the economic war, and they're going to do what they're going to do in their interests, but we have to be very, very careful because we are really starting a war with them, and it is going to be very, very dangerous for us. Basically, if you don't grow some balls, America, these bankers are going to be your ruin. Here's 5.5 minutes with Peter Schiff explaining this. He does a very good job. He is the CEO of Europac Financial. It is an investment firm that actually knows how to invest, and he also has a gold and silver distributorship. But like Chris said, he's an Austrian economics. Now, he's from Connecticut. He's not actually Austrian, and Austrian economics isn't from Austria. It just happens to be called the Austrian school as opposed to the German school, which is where we got the other kooks, especially the British kooks Keynes, and we basically live in a Keynesian economic nightmare, and the solution to that is sound Austrian economics, which is not necessarily libertarian in a political bent, but Austrian economics is based on real fundamental basic principles of economics that are true, which is why the Austrians are able to predict these things, and the Keynesians seem to have no idea what's going on. You really need to learn to understand the difference. Yeah. So here's 5.5 minutes with Schiff. We'll comment on it on the other side, and then we'll go to closing thoughts. Here's Peter Schiff.
The Fed is the biggest buyers of bonds out there. Not only is the Fed buying gone, but the private buyers aren't going to be there either. But here's the biggest bombshell of the week, maybe of the year. While everybody was focusing their attention on what the Fed didn't even say, right? They were pretending the Fed said they were going to taper, even though they didn't. So while everybody was focusing on stuff the Fed didn't say, nobody paid attention to what China actually did say, because China announced the mother of all tapering. China finally came out and admitted that a further expansion of their foreign currency reserves is no longer in China's interest. Now, expanding their foreign currency reserves hasn't been in China's interest for a long time. It's just that now they finally come out and publicly admitted it. Now, what does that mean? If China isn't going to expand its balance sheet anymore because it's not in its interest, that means it has to stop buying treasuries. It has to stop buying mortgage-backed securities, the same securities the Federal Reserve is buying and is threatening to taper off. Well, if China stops buying, they've tapered down to zero, right? They've gone cold turkey on it. They're not just going to wean themselves off it. Because even if they were just to buy fewer treasuries than they're buying now, their balance sheet by definition would then be expanding. They've just said that it's not in their interest to expand their balance sheet. So if they, unless they want to do something that is admittedly contrary to their interests, then they've got to get out of the bond buying business. Now, I think not only does China think that expanding its balance sheet is not in its interest, I think that maintaining the current size of its balance sheet is not in its interest. The balance sheet is too big. I think China wants to unwind. I think they want an exit strategy. Now, some people might think, well, does that mean that China has to go and dump its bonds into the market? No. You know, thanks to Operation Twist, which, remember, I called Operation Screw, and for good reason, and here's one of the reasons, I think when the Fed was selling its short-term treasuries and buying all those long-term treasuries, China was on the other side of that trade. China was selling the Fed its long-term maturities, long maturity debt, and swapping it for the short stuff that the Fed was selling. So now China has a very short maturity for the treasuries that it holds. And if it makes the decision that it doesn't want as big a balance sheet, that it wants its balance sheet to shrink, it doesn't have to sell any of the treasury bonds. It just simply allows them to mature. You see, that's why we're screwed. Because when the treasury bonds that China owns matures, where is the government going to get the money to pay them off? They're going to have to sell even more bonds. But wait a minute. If the Fed is tapering, who's going to buy those bonds? And again, if the Fed is tapering, where's the private sector demand going to come from? The market would fall through the floor. See, the truth is, if China means what it says, the Fed is going to have to back up the truck. I mean, not just not taper, but they are going to have to significantly increase the amount of monthly QE that they do in order to pick up China's slack. That's what's going to happen in 2014. You know, even if Janet Yellen surprises me and tapers, which I don't expect her to do that, but if she does, she's going to be untapering but quick because she's going to have to pick up the missing demand that the Chinese are no longer supplying. And believe me, if China stops buying, a lot of other foreign central banks are also going to stop buying, because the only reason they are buying is that because they're in a competitive devaluation with China. But when everybody surrenders in the currency war, America loses. In fact, not only did China state that they don't want to expand their balance sheet, they publicly stated that they wanted to let markets determine exchange rates. Well, that's what happens, because the reason that China has such an enormous balance sheet is because it's had to accumulate all these dollars to suppress the exchange rate of their currency. So when China stops expanding the balance sheet, that also means that the Chinese currency is going to appreciate, and China has said it will allow that appreciation to happen, certainly at a much faster pace in the future than it has in the past, and ultimately just leave it up to the markets. That means the dollar is going to get crushed against the Chinese yuan, as well as a lot of other currencies that are set to rise with yuan. That is going to dramatically undermine demand for treasuries, demand for dollars. What does that mean, right? That means the Federal Reserve, again, is going to have to buy a lot more. but it also means that U.S. consumers are going to have to pay a lot more for the things that they buy, because if the Chinese are going to be rewarded finally with a stronger currency, they're going to have more purchasing power. More of what China produces is going to stay in China, and more of the money the Fed creates is going to stay in America. So now China is going to get some badly needed deflation, because they're going to see falling prices and an appreciating currency, and we're going to get hit with a tsunami of inflation, or rather rising prices, as a result of all the money staying in America but the goods staying in China. That is going to further impede the economy. In fact, you know, if you look at it,
well, if you didn't understand what Peter Schiff just said, you need to learn this stuff. We no longer live in a country where you can just get an education, get a good job, and work until you're 65 and retire, and everything will be good. The things that they've done, if you have to go back in time a little bit, not all the way to the back to the, you know, Fed issue, but if you go back to the dot-bomb crash, and also what was going on in that era was corporations were manufacturing, especially headquarters for major corporations, were moving out of this country like a flood, opened the floodgates, and they left. And we have a fraction of our corporate and especially manufacturing left. So that whole base that built this country is gone. Yeah, we have manufacturing left, and you can argue different points of that, but a huge chunk of it is gone. Prior to that, and I remember when I was a teenager, when Japan started really producing a lot of goods and services, and everybody was concerned that all of the trade imbalance, which means we're buying so much stuff from Japan that our dollar was flowing over there, and we weren't getting there wasn't a return. And so Japan started buying up big chunks of America and our bonds and everything else. So we've been through this before, but we've never been through it being as weak as we are, with the lack of size of our manufacturing base, the financial crisis that we're in, the debt we're in, and the size of our competitor we're importing goods from. We've had a $50+ billion a month trade imbalance with China for a long time. I remember when Walmart expanded all across the country and all of a sudden became just this meganopolis, and all the Chinese goods were coming into Walmart, and that was kind of where you found them, and you didn't see them throughout the rest of the market. Now they're everywhere. Our whole economy and basic goods and services, you know, come out, not just China, but a big chunk of them come out of China. So that trade imbalance has been going on a long time. Well, when you have a $50 billion a month plus trade imbalance, well, they got to take that money and do something with it. So they buy our bonds, and they buy our land, and they buy our corporations, and they buy our banks, and then pretty soon they got too much. And right now they're sitting on $3.66 trillion worth of too much. And it hurts them because after a while it devalues their money. And I find it interesting because you probably read a lot of this and probably even read more than I do. But, you know, they had a 7.5% growth. And everybody's criticizing that like they've gone down. Well, what are we at, 0.2? You know what I mean? Europe is like 0.02. China's eaten us alive. And everybody wants to criticize them, but they also own Hong Kong, which Communist China has not messed with. They left that economic powerhouse of Hong Kong, which is one of the major trading powers and economic and banking systems in Asia. It's huge, you know, very low taxes, tremendous amount of prosperity. And it's huge. They left it alone. They didn't, you know, get in there and start manipulating all their communist ideals in it. So they left it as a free enterprise system. So you have all this stuff going on, all these corporations over there, all this massive trade imbalance, and they've been buying our debt. They also sit on, I think it's about $1.2, $1.5 trillion of our trade dollar that they're just sitting on it. So really they have, between bonds and our U.S. trade dollar, they have, I don't know, $4.7 trillion. Now what happens, and what Peter Schiff said was so key, they started moving their long-term bonds, like their 30-year yield and that kind of stuff. They started moving it into short-term payoff. Well, a lot of people who invest in the U.S. bonds because of the used to be the stability, safety of it, not because of the big payout, but the safety and the guaranteed return, would just roll their money over. Well, what happens when China goes, we want to cash it in? That was what Peter was saying. It's one of the points he was making was, if they cash in on all those trade, where in the hell are we going to get the money? And who's going to buy up all those bonds to give them the cash? Number one. And number two, what happens if they short sell that $1.2 to $1.5 trillion of U.S. trade dollar that they're sitting on? And what happens when, which they are doing, they've been developing their own internal dollar instead of using the U.S. dollar as the go-between. So like you buy some goods and services from Japan, then they would transfer it to U.S. dollar, then they would trade it back to the union. And there was that constant flow in the U.S. dollar, you know, used to be always be in every transaction. And there's a lot of money in money. A lot of people don't understand this, but there's a lot of money in trading dollars, you know, from different currencies, currency trading. But so what happens when 25% of the world no longer uses the U.S. dollar? What happens when it's 30, 35%? So we have trillions. I don't know what the number is. I have to look it up. But we have trillions of U.S. dollars that are out there in the international market. What happens when nobody uses it anymore and all of a sudden it comes home? So we have trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that we've pumped into the market, the international market, and sold out in bonds. So that all comes home and dumps right on top of our economic system, on top of all this dang money. I think the Fed is sitting on $3.7 trillion right now in their balance book of printed money, you know, making this fake money to buy these bonds to keep our economy going. So, you know, we're dealing with $7, $8 trillion of money that really isn't doing anything in our economy in terms of basic economics that the average American understands. That's some serious stuff, Rex. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's very serious stuff, and we're going to experience massive inflation because of this and potentially national security threats and people's lives are at risk. It's very, very dangerous, but this is what happens when you allow private banking interests and private corporate interests to use your government to secure their profits over and against the people. And that is the key here. The only way to right this, the only way to correct it, is to restore good governance back to your government and take it away from the corporate interests and the bankers. And the only way that you can do that is to have honorable men and women who understand our Constitution and understand conservative principles and are willing to fight for them in the federal government. There are some. Audit the Fed is a huge, very important first step in exposing the Federal Reserve so that it can be rolled back. And they know this, which is why they're resisting it. Now, Yellen's appointment is going to go through smoothly. She was probably going to get approved anyway, but at least there would be some more focus on audit the Fed bill. But now that Harry Reid has nuked the Senate, you won't hear this stuff. That's how dangerous this is. And it is precisely because of this danger that you need to get real focused on 2014 and get more people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee in that Senate and more people like Trey Gowdy and Justin Amash and Willie Gohmert in your house, not people like Boehner and Cantor and McComed and Gramnesty and Corker. These people have to go. You're going to feel the economic pain one way or another. The question is, will it be like a Band-Aid, short and quick, and we recover on the other side, or will it be a long, slow, managed decline into oblivion for your country? That is how important these 2014 midterms are. So understand
really
something. This
that.
This is desperation of a dying tyranny, a Federal Reserve paper scheme that has seen its last days, and they are just trying to print their way out of this problem, and a Democrat Party that controls your federal government and a Republican Party that is controlled opposition. the measures they are taking now are sheer desperation. Now is the time for a restoration, and it is totally up to you. Get the show out there. Get informed. Get people involved. Make 2014 happen now. Chris, let's go to final thoughts, and I'll bring it on home.
Well, final thoughts. I think that it's important to understand. Excuse me. You know, I don't live in fear, and I think that's important to understand. And a lot of times people just spend their lives going from shock media to shock media to shock media. IRS, Benghazi, NSA, oh, my God. You know, Hastings died. I mean, it just, you know, it's just insane. Iran, oh, my God, nuclear bomb. You know, when did Iran come into power? I don't know, 10,000 years ago. You know, it's just this shock and awe. You have, if you get your mind focused and you educate yourself on some basic things, what is a conservative? You know, what did our founding fathers mean? You know, what was the original intent and why they set our country up the way they set it up? You know, what is going on? Why are we where we're at, and why aren't we recovering? That's really what you have to educate yourself on. And then once you get that foundation, you can build on it, and you can educate people on it, and you can turn your country around. This country has been in some pretty bad times before, and sometimes people get a little fatalistic, you know, on the group, and I'm like going, remember the Civil War? I mean, you know, we've been through some rough times. You know, Lincoln threw newspaper people in jail so they wouldn't speak out against his war. I mean, come on, you know? Look at the Second World War. We put Japanese in internment camps. You know, everybody's freaking out about, you know, FEMA camps and, oh, my God, the police have, you know, you know, and you spend all your life in shock. And you've got to get educated and think beyond it. The only reason they have power over you is you give it to them. And knowledge is power. So educate yourself. You know, I think about what are we doing, you know, these shows and these groups and digging up this information and trying to connect the dots for people. Half the stuff in my group I'd rather not even talk about because, I already figured it out. It's not really the important issue. It's only a major issue, and it is important, but it's not the underlying issue. If we wanted to speak about the underlying issue, we would talk about the Fed and the economy all the time. Because if you don't have a sound economy, you'll never be free. Obamacare or no Obamacare. You know, it's not going to work because it's going to collapse. So what the hell? You know, and how many articles a day come out on Obamacare? And the news cycles and the talking heads. It's like, yeah, we get it. Move on. You know, get people in there that will defeat it. We had the opportunity to defeat it multiple times. Newt talked about a couple years ago, he said, this is exactly how you defeat it, because he understood it, because he dealt with Clinton, who was a major lib, and he was coming in to transform America, and they had Hillary care coming down our throat, and he went in there and he defeated that stuff, and he got control of it, and got compromised, and got a bunch of changes made and reforms in government. Well, when he left, you know, the fearful rhino squishes, you know, these corporatist Democrats is what they are, you know, they stayed in power and got reelected, and now they're at the head, you know, whether it's McConnell or McCain or Boehner or Cantor or any of these guys. These guys have been around for a long time, and they don't even follow the Republican platform. Forget being a conservative. You know, they can abuse the Constitution just as much as the Dems can. So you got to get off this left-right paradigm and recognize that if you're going to win and you're going to get your country back and move it back towards being a republic and giving states back the power that our Constitution set in place for them, then, you know, you got to know what you're talking about. And so, you know, it's that thing, and I say this all the time, you have to know what you believe before you can fight. You know, otherwise you're just posting articles for the news for free. Now, I used to get paid to deliver newspapers when I was a kid. Now people do it for free. And you don't change anything. You're just passing news around. You know, focus, learn. Find the important topics, get around people who don't get all caught up and do shock and awe all day long, and become an educator. That's a pretty important first step. Become educated. Become an educator, and then there's plenty to do after that. I'm done.
Yep, I think you got it. Happy Obamacare games. If you want to live in a dystopian future where you are merely a cog in the machine and all of the money and revelry and decadence is in the capital city, then just keep going down the path you're going. Keep worrying about the next entertaining thing. Keep getting distracted by bread and circuses. And don't talk to anybody about politics or religion or fundamental first principles. But if you want to live in a free republic, then it's up to you, and you have to get busy. You have to make it happen. You have to stop the Hunger Games. You have to stop the Democrats, socialists from expanding this state and turning us into a police state and an empire and a morally bankrupt and financially bankrupt wreck. But the only way you can do that is with a real opposition party. Unfortunately, we have a duopoly. There's only two choices, and they're exactly the same, the Republicans and the Democrats. The slight difference between them is that the Republican Party has some actual conservatives in it. What you have to do is get more people involved, people who are not already involved. Don't just talk amongst yourselves. That doesn't do anything. You have to go and convert the uninvolved, the low-informed, teach them and get them involved and get them active. You have to know what conservative principles are and why they're good for everybody in this country. You have to know who the conservative candidates are and what they're going to do in office to right the ship, roll back the Leviathan state, and restore the republic. And then three, you have to get them elected. 2014 is your next opportunity. It starts now. Get busy. Share this show. Get the information out there. Get on Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom, and make it happen. And don't be freaked out by nuclear threats from Iran, nuclear options in the Senate, Obamacare failures, website destruction, premium increases. Don't get freaked out by this stuff. These are inevitable symptoms of a dying empire and a tyranny that is flailing to hold on to its power. This is the time to strike a blow for liberty. And remember something. We're coming up to Thanksgiving. And I wish everybody safe travels and enjoy time with your family. And remember something, the best way to piss them off at the Thanksgiving table is talk about religion and politics. Well, that's not what you really want to do. You want to love your family and you want to be there and keep things kind of nice. But remember something, it is the most important thing there is. What you believe, what you stand for eternally, and what you believe and what you stand for in the here and now. These are the two most important things, and everything's political. The turkey that you're eating is political, whether it's a GMO turkey or a fried turkey, whether you're allowed to have a turkey or how big the turkey is. It's all political. But I'm going to close with words from the first president of these United States, President George Washington, who declared in October of the year of our Lord, 1789, by the President of the United States of America, a proclamation, whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey his will, to be grateful for his benefits, and humbly to implore his protection and favor, and whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. For the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one we now lately instituted, for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us. That was the President of the United States in 1789. That's what this country means. And be thankful that you are here now, that you have some semblance of liberty left. Stand up. Well, first take a knee and figure out who you are in relation to eternity. And then stand up and fight for the liberty you've been handed and hand it on to your posterity. It is a privilege, it is a right, and it is a duty. We'll be back next week with more conservative grassroots. Rah, 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 because 2014 is right around the corner. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
My fellow Americans, when Nancy and I celebrate Thanksgiving weekend each year in California's Santa Ynez Mountains, we find it a wonderful opportunity to be together with family and friends and, like so many Americans, a chance to reflect on all the Lord's blessings to our country. We've been particularly conscious this year of one blessing that's made this holiday season a happy one for countless more Americans. Americans who in years past were trapped in want and poverty. Only 4 years ago, as our economic policies were just taking effect, we began what became the second longest peacetime expansion since World War II. This year, the stock market has hit all-time highs, while inflation continues near all-time lows. Only this week, new figures show inflation running at less than 1% in 1986. The trade deficit continues its substantial decline, and above all, today more Americans are working than ever before. So, contrary to those many predictions over the last 4 years, some of them still being heard as late as last August, there is no recession. Our expansion is not only with us, but continues gaining momentum, and of course, that means more jobs for more Americans. It's this last development we should be especially grateful for. In the past 4 years, we've created more than 12 million payroll jobs, and that means 2.2 million people have lifted themselves out of poverty since 1983. As perhaps you know, it's budget preparation time in Washington, and recently, in reviewing these statistics, I reflected back on some of the solutions suggested a few years ago to our economic problems. They had been the worst since the Great Depression. I can especially remember one Make Work Jobs program that Congress came up with, a $5.4 billion extravaganza that would have helped a relatively tiny number of people. Because it was just this sort of marketplace intrusion and government boondoggle that had put our economy in trouble in the first place, I decided that Thanksgiving or not, this was one turkey we didn't need. And to resounding criticism from Congress and the media, I put a stop to it. Well, instead, we continued with an economic policy that lowered tax rates, cut spending, and abolished unnecessary regulations. And what a jobs program that turned out to be. We've averaged over 250,000 people finding jobs each and every month. And last month alone, close to 300,000 Americans went to work. So I think there's a lesson never to be forgotten here. It's people, not government, who create wealth, provide growth, and ensure prosperity. That may sound elementary enough, but the history of our economic difficulties, especially the terribly big deficits we run each year, stem directly from our failure to remember that government consumes wealth. It doesn't create it. You see, it's a kind of legacy from a period when I was back in college studying economics. Following the theories of a noted English economist of the period, John Maynard Keynes, economists and politicians used to say that when bad times occur, the only way to restore prosperity is to spend our way out of it with massive new government programs paid for by borrowing. We owe it to ourselves, they used to chant. But everybody knows you can't spend yourself rich any more than you can drink yourself sober, and you can't prime the pump without pumping the prime. And that's why the automatic recourse to government spending sent interest rates and inflation skyrocketing, slowed the economy, caused unemployment, and gave us what they call today a structural deficit. That's a deficit that goes up automatically each year because of a vast array of federal programs that Congress refuses to reduce. And under the law, the president can't cut back by himself. Since our first day in office, we've been going after this structural deficit by first, asking for major spending cuts, and second, asking for reforms like the line item veto and balanced budget amendment that would, well, unstructure the structured deficit. So, while we've been occupied with the Iranian issue over the past 2 weeks, let's not forget that there are many other issues that concern us, and this deficit problem remains a major priority. In order to pursue this issue and all the others like it on our domestic and foreign agenda, we must be certain to maintain peace in the world and keep our defenses strong while, of course, sparking our domestic economy to even greater growth. As Jefferson once said, his one fear about our Constitution was that it permitted government to borrow. Well, government has borrowed too much and spent too much. So believe me, I'll be back in Washington next week, determined to work with the Congress to get deficit spending under control and keep America growing with record numbers of jobs for American people. Until next week, thanks for listening. God bless you.